Chicago White Sox Hall of Famer Frank Thomas, from HBO's Veep, Timothy Simons, and stand-up comedian Eugene Merman. And now, here's your host, a man who is a Hall of Famer at getting stains on his shirt, Justin Kaufman.
That's where you're wrong, Stephanie. I have one stain. I just wear the same shirt. All right. Welcome to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We have an unbelievable show. And it's great to be back in the seat. Mike Steven, thank you so much for sitting in last night. You had a great show. I was off last night for the theater. I had to be a good, not only patron, but dad. And I watched my third grader in a play. And he was so good. So good. I don't know where he gets it. Tried to give him notes afterwards. He wasn't taking any dad notes. My favorite part about the show and what he has to work on, because he was tremendous in it. He really was. For a third grader, he came out. He was in character. He wasn't just a kid reading the lines. He had a character to him. He got an entrance or an exit clap when his scene was over. And I told him the only thing he had to work on was he was such a perfectionist, and in my case, I mean, surrounded by amateurs. You know, I understand. He was direct, like, he would say his line, and there was so, Pete, there were like 8 seconds of pauses between every line. You know, with one kid going, no, it's your turn.
Yeah.
Turn, that kind of stuff. It's third grade play.
Yeah.
And my favorite part was, unfortunately, he had his line down, and he knew the script because he had really, really poured over it. But the problem was is that when the kid wouldn't do his line, Miles, he'd break character.
Mm.
And he'd go, come on. Any point, like, your turn. And I'm like, and I was like, you know, so I told him a little bit. I was like, hey, you know, think about maybe, you know, you have to trust your scene partner and never get done, although, you know. And but then I started thinking where he gets that from. And I was like, well, I started to think about my days on a softball diamond, and as they coach, now don't get me wrong, champion, you know,
yeah,
two-time champion.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many right fielders I would do that to. I'd be like, come to the right, get in, move back, to the left. He hit it right to the left last time. So I was like, it's kind of the same thing.
He demand perfection. I you know, I get it. He learned. He took the time to learn his lines, learn what he's supposed to do.
Right. My favorite thing he said at dinner at the end of the night was, you know what, Dad? I think I want to win a Tony. I was like, hey, man, there's a lot of – and my family – kind of looked at me like I was I wasn't that great of a supportive parent because, you know, grandma was like, yeah. And I was like, hey, a lot of great actors didn't win a Tony. Like, it's the first thing I said, like, hey, there's a really great talent that doesn't win a Tony. So good luck. Brian D'Arcy James on the show. He's been nominated 4 times. He hasn't won. So long way to go, son. Finish that hot dog. But it was great, and Mike had a great show, and I'm happy to be back tonight on the show. Big Hurt, I like to call him Big Frank. Frank Thomas will be here. Frank Thomas, of course, the Hall of Fame first baseman for the Chicago White Sox, and now the author of The Big Hurt's Guide to Barbecue and Grilling. We're going to talk with him about his new cookbook, Frank Thomas doing a cookbook. And we'll talk about the role foods played in his life and his parents' kitchen growing up. We'll also talk about Father's Day and life after retirement. He's my guest tonight at the big table. Also coming up tonight, some great names in comedy. Eugene Merman is going to be here, stand-up comedian who plays Gene on Bob's Burgers on Fox. He's also been on Flight of the Conchords. He's been in so many different great television programs and also great alt sort of stand-up scenes in this country. Eugene Merman is going to be opening for Flight of the Conchords at Millennium Park this weekend. Eugene Merman will join us later in the 9 o'clock hour. Also, Timothy Simons, who plays Jonah Ryan. Congressman Jonah Ryan on the hit show Veep on HBO will join us tonight. We'll talk about his roots in Chicago theater. He was here for about 8 years. And then we'll talk to him about that show and what makes Jonah Ryan so despicable? Talk with Tim Simons coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also tonight, Write Club Radio. Two writers enter, one writer leaves. Tonight we're going to do... I have them here. Hold on. These are really good. I'm really looking forward to tonight because it's persistence versus quit. And if you haven't heard us do Write Club Radio before, two writers, Chicago writers, come in. And they've been given rules, 3 minutes, four minutes, to essentially write. Well, that's the only parameters. They're given two sort of centrifugal forces, persistence, and quit. Jen Ellison and Jeff Miller will be here tonight, along with Lindsay Moscato. Write Club Radio. Love this segment. You guys call in with the winners, 312-981-7200. Also, Scott Smith will be here to talk about some new media, including Tronc and Ringer, Bill Simmons' Ringer. We're going to talk about that. And then also tonight, we've been doing this all week, such great diversity and being very eclectic in our music. Tonight, the music is live bagpipes, Scottish bagpipes. For the festival out in Itasca, celebrating its 30th year, we will have live bagpipers in studio coming up a little bit later in the show. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, let's take a break. Come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. My biggest regret from last night into today was that we got my son for being in the play. We got him a huge cookie cake, like a chocolate chip cookie cake. And by the time we got back from Portillo's and there was a shake involved, we didn't really eat much. And now, man, I should have brought that to work. I'm really hankering for a cookie cake right now. So that's the second note. One, don't direct on stage. Two, remind Dad to bring the cookie cake to work that we don't eat. So... All right. It's time for the carryout. This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. A new study says that half of Chicagoans can't afford where they live. The other half, they're mega rich. What's it really say for Chicagoans? Nothing, because every Chicagoan knows this already. Do you really think anyone's like, yeah, $2,500 for this two-bedroom seems reasonable? I mean, it's eight blocks from the L. And forget it if you own your own place. The monthly taxes on my townhome are more than what I paid for my first apartment back in 1993. Also, my townhome doesn't have six roommates and a ton of black lights. But I did keep the Reservoir Dogs poster. A filibuster in the Senate? I thought they were on summer vacation like they are, you know, every day. A Connecticut Democrat spoke for 15 hours about gun control, and it looks like it worked. The Senate said they will call a bill that addresses banning guns to those on the no-fly list. When reached for comment, Senator Ted Cruz was like, wait, filibusters work? The Chicago police announced today that they're sending more police and even private security to strengthen their presence at the Pride Parade in 2 weeks. So if you're going to the parade, don't be confused with police in uniform and parade revelers who dress like police. Easy to spot the non-police officer. They're not wearing pants. Microsoft became one of the first giant tech companies to get into the legal marijuana business. So essentially, you can expect weed that'll make you crash? Good. Disney resorts are still reeling after the terrible incident where a two-year-old was snatched by an alligator in a lagoon. So they're going to take action, make their signs clearer. What? Did I read that? What? That's what they're doing? I don't know about you, but maybe it's not a sign issue. Maybe it's a f***ing alligator issue. Ban the alligators, put up an electric fence, hire alligator wrestlers, buy a ton of Walmart assault rifles. But for the love of mankind, do something more than change the font on your warning signs. We cool? Ugh. Big news in the music industry, I guess. The Grammys announced that they will be adding streaming music to all categories, this to include artists who don't release albums through the major label system. This is a huge coup for, well, pretty much every musician nowadays, including Chicago's Chance the Rapper. When reached for comment, Steely Dan was like, "Oh man, that keeping out streaming was the only way we ever won anything." All right, from the top, guys. 3, 2, I found a picture. Dun, more flute. Dun, dun. In weather, muggy. In sports, is it possible? Is it true? Sox won a series? They beat the Tigers 2 out of 3 to take the series here at home. So what's it mean? Well, it means that the Sox are still in it. They're only 2.5 games back of the Cleveland Indians, and they head to Cleveland for a huge weekend series. The Cubs are off today as well. They host the Pirates at Wrigley tomorrow. I'd say that's a big series, but have you seen how far back the Pirates are? They're 11 and a half back to the Cubs, so I said good day. It couldn't get any better for Cubs fans. The team called up their number one prospect catcher, Wilson Contreras, today. He was hitting 350 in AAA, so add that cherry to the Cubs Sunday. The Bears wrapped up their minicamp today. They were supposed to do another day, but Coach John Fox canceled it. He said he liked what he saw from his guys. You know what? I'm going to store away this little nugget for that one time that Jay Cutler throws an interception because the receiver ran the wrong route. Yeah, remember that one minicamp day. Today marks the 20th anniversary of the Bulls winning the NBA championship back in 1996, beating Seattle in a Game 6. Remember that? I remember like it was yesterday. Just walking around Chicago all aimlessly looking for something to happen, high-fiving strangers, goading on riot cops, throwing a trash can through a window of a Foot Locker. You know, the things you do when you celebrate a championship. In more current basketball news, Chicago Bull Pau Gasol is playing in the Olympics for his home country of Spain, but he's so fearful of Zika that he's contemplating freezing his sperm before he goes to Rio. Pau, come on. It's just Zika. It's not like you're playing Draymond Green. Speaking of Draymond, the NBA Finals Game 6 in Cleveland tonight. Draymond Green back from a nut punch suspension. Will he punch again? That's essentially the ads on ABC. Will Draymond Green punch again? Tune in. Will there be a nut punch? It's really the only reason to watch. And finally tonight, several aldermen pushed a new mandatory sick day ordinance through committee today. It states that all Chicago employers must give employees 5 paid sick days. But it hasn't come up for a full council vote yet because, you know, most of the aldermen called in sick. That's the carryout for June 16th, 2016. Hey, we got some great new appetizers tonight. Do you like bacon-wrapped grapes? You know, it's actually really hard to wrap bacon around a grape, so you know what? You're welcome. More to come here on The Download. Scott Smith is here. We're going to talk a little new media. Tronk, Ringer, Gawker. Yeah, that sounds like a good segment. That's coming up. And after that, Frank Thomas is here. The Big Table. It's a download. You're on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Coming up, we're going to talk with Scott Smith, our new media contributor. Here on The Download. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So Zimmerman told me that you were thinking about coming to Displains with us for the Taste of Displains.
I was toying around with the idea.
Why don't you do it? The fans would go crazy. Well, they would go crazy.
That's the problem. It's going to be so Beatlesque. I don't want to... I mean, Displains, they've got a great police force. I just don't know if they're ready for that kind of crush
of
people.
It's very One Direction-like right. When Martier travels.
That's right.
Well, I think it would be great.
Rob who? What?
I think the listeners would love it. I think the people at the Taste of Displains would love it. I would love it. So
I think I might be able to convince my wife to come.
It's halfway. I mean, would you have to come back? I guess you'd still have to come in and do Patty's show and the shows after.
No, I would be done.
You'd be done. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
And you know what? I'm out there in the Northwest burbs as well. Yeah, you know what? I'll give Stephanie a call.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to be on you all show. We're going to take calls on this. We're going to do a whole hour on Martier coming to Displains. Yeah. How great would that be, people, right? For Rob to be out at the and it's is it supposed to be hot tomorrow?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I just
beautiful.
You know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It'll be a beautiful night. You can wear, you know, some of your finest short sleeve stuff, you know, some shorts, some flippy flops.
My plaid.
Yeah, your plaid. Bring we'll out plaid the plaid. It out. I'm telling you, man.
I'd even iron it, too.
Let's not get crazy. All right, well, we're going to stay on you tonight, Rob. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 8 o'clock, the big hurt. Frank Thomas, the Hall of Fame first baseman for the Chicago White Sox, is in studio to talk about his life since retirement. We'll also talk about his new book, The Big Hurt's Guide to Barbecue and Grilling. We'll talk about Father's Day. There's a lot coming up here to talk with Big Hurt about Frank Thomas. How great is that? Frank Thomas here on the download. Hall of Famer. Always good to have a Hall of Famer. Also, later in the program, Eugene Merman will be here. Timothy Simons, who plays Jonah Hill. Or Jonah Hill.
He's such a chameleon. He can even play Jonah Hill.
He plays Jonah Hill, who plays other... No, Jonah Ryan on the HBO show Veep. which is one of my favorite shows, and Jonah Ryan is one of my favorite characters. And then coming up at 10 o'clock tonight, Write Club Radio. Two writers enter, one writer leaves. Tonight, Persistence versus Quit. Great. In studio with me now, Download's new media contributor, Scott Smith. Scott's worked for a lot of publications here in town, and he's a regular here on the show. Good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while.
Good to see you too, man. It's been a couple months. I'm good. I feel like it's great. I come in here now, and the sun's still out. It doesn't feel like
you're such
a
snowbird.
Yeah.
Living in Chicago, you just skipped downtown right. for the last 3 months. Thanks. Yep. Well, it's good to have you here in the summer. All right, let's start with Trunk. Obviously, the Tribune publishing unit here renamed itself the Trunk, but that's not what we're talking about.
Is it the Trunk?
The Trunk.
The Trunk.
Just amazing amount of mockery about right. this name, but that's not what we're talking about. Yesterday, one of the officers wrote something in Pointer about being excited, about the company being excited. Forget the name for a second and think about all the things that this company might do.
Right. I mean, the Trunk, it's important to remember, is a portmanteau for Tribune Online content, right? And so the goal is to really reposition the company as this sort of digital-first company. And so as part of that, you have a little bit of content marketing from the chief digital officer, Ann Vasquez, mm-hmm. who published about an 800-plus word piece on Pointer yesterday and was essentially saying that, you know, yeah, you can. First of all, it starts off with a quote from Alice in Wonderland. The only way to achieve the impossible is to believe it's possible.
There you go.
I had another quote in mind, which is the lady doth protest too much, methinks, from Hamlet. I had a boss who would always say, like, it's a really bad idea to go out and talk about all the things that we're going to do, because what if it all falls through? You know, wait until we've actually done it. Wait until we've launched the thing and then talk about the mm-hmm. reasons behind it. And I thought that was a really good, I've always kind of kept that in mind, and it was probably good advice here right. because they've talked about, you know, there's been a lot of skepticism about what they're going to actually do. You know, Michael Farrow's last big news gig was at the Sun-Times, and he didn't exactly take this idea of using technology to make the news better and put it to work in any sort of meaningful way. It was mostly aggrego. It was a lot of sort of scraped and copy and pasted content. And so, you know, Vasquez is basically saying, you know, we're going to do all these great things, and there's a lot you can learn from Trunk, which is hilarious because Trunk as a company doesn't actually exist until next Monday. You know, they haven't officially changed the name until the 20th. So even more so, they're saying, like, we're so great, except they don't exist yet.
Okay, so being the devil's advocate in this situation, Trunk, she promises three collaboration. She talks about investment.
Invest in technology and respect journalism.
And,
those are the
journalism,
three
right.
sort of pillars of what she says Trunk is going to be about.
And, you know, I will say, I mean, let's talk about idea versus execution, because the ideas that were happening at the Sun-Times, the idea of experimentation, trying different things, taking old media, put it into new, they're all great ideas. Where the Chicago Sun-Times fell apart in terms of what critics will say is the execution was pretty terrible.
Right, and I think you start to see some of the questions about that show up in this piece, you know, where she says we're going to invest in technology,
right.
take machines to find graphics, thumbnails, photo galleries, and videos faster and better by using AI, which really kind of sounds like circa 2010 scrapers, which basically just pull content from other spaces and republish them, you know, inside the Tribune's web pages and things like that. There's a lot of talk about invigorating this tech startup culture inside this old media company. She talks a lot about the patents from Dr. Patrick Soon-Shiong, who has...
The billionaire from Los Angeles.
Right, who has made a huge investment in Trunk. And that would be great, except most of his patents are around medical technology. So it's hard to figure out exactly, and there's no information in this piece about how that technology is going to be in some way modified to help the news.
But you and I have had conversations, whether it be here on the radio or at a bar stool or in a conference or symposium, about old media companies having a difficult transition to the new digital world. It sounds to me that Michael Farrow and the Tribune company, now known as Trunk, is doing exactly what we talked about. They're starting to take an old media company and turn it digital first. Why are you so skeptical about that?
I think I'm skeptical because I haven't seen it happen yet. Again, like on paper, this company, Trunk, doesn't actually exist for another 3 or 4 days. So that's part of it. I also, we're going to do all these crazy things. We're going to take all these crazy ideas and upend this legacy media company. Yeah, that sounds a lot like the Sam Zell era, right? Another, mm-hmm. Time where there were some interesting ideas and really terrible execution. And so hearing all of this kind of stuff, or reading it rather, it felt a lot like that, where, we've heard this kind of thing before. And not for nothing, there are some pretty solid technologists at Tribune right now.
Right.
The Trib Apps team.
And full disclosure, you worked at Tribune.
I did. Yeah, I worked for Chicago Magazine, which is owned by Tribune Publishing in some way, shape, or form. It's been twisted and spindled from now. But, the Trib Apps team, it was great and done some really interesting things with databases and, processing data and making it useful for readers and things like that. There are some really solid minds and always have been on the newsroom, on the street level kind of folks. And I still believe in those folks. And I continue to see the folks that are three levels above them, let's say, not getting it and saying that we're going to completely reinvent things rather than saying, it's possible there might be people who are really quite talented and know where this company should go. Maybe let's start by actually asking them some questions.
Well, I mean, I don't know what they're doing behind closed doors, but I'm interested because, beyond our sort of bias in Chicago and sort of our armchair quarterbacking of the big media companies here in town, when I think of companies like the Washington Post, this is a good example, and she mentions it in there, owned by Amazon, or the same guy that owns Amazon, and you're seeing a move to consolidate almost what consumers know from how revolutionized the marketplace became to maybe revolutionize the way that news is being done. Or so you see it happening in that company. Now, that company is a competitor to Trunk.
Right.
So it's safe to say that Michael Farrell is trying to do the same thing.
There's certainly an attempt at, credit by association. She mentions Washington Post. She mentions BuzzFeed and saying, these are folks who get it and have used technology to forward good journalism. And that is absolutely true. And there are other places that have used technology and have created new forms and new platforms. And we're going to talk about, Ringer a little bit as an example of that have created a better news experience. And that's absolutely true. It's possible to do that. However, when you look at what Michael Farrow and people he's associated with have done in a previous news environment,
the track record at the Sun-Times,
right? Like, so if you really look and say, like, that's what the Sun-Times did, let's use that as a, and it's weird that there
that's
have
his
been
resume
a
now.
Lot right there have been right. a lot of conversations about Tribune and Trunk that haven't really talked as much about what he did at the Sun-Times network as I think would really be helpful, because you do then see, this is actually his track record, these are the things. And frankly, there were a lot less people, a lot less sort of corporate intrigue, let's say, all the things that have been going on with the board and the Gannett bid and all that were not things he had to deal with at the Sun-Times. He really kind of had, people under him and great lieutenants, but he really could have and did certainly dictate things and change things. And there weren't a lot of people standing in his way. And his record there is not exactly exemplary.
And I can talk about this all night. I love having you on, Scott. We're going to take a break so we stay on target here, but because there's other media stuff to talk about. But I do think the one thing to notice with the Sun-Times and the Tribune is that the content producers, meaning the journalists, mm-hmm. they have, beyond the inevitable belt tightening that the corporate media world does now for every paper and every facet of this world, they are still producing great work. And so it's not that Michael Farrell is coming in to necessarily change the way that the journalism is being done. He's really trying to find a way to keep up with the technology and how it's being delivered.
Yeah. And again, this is not a reflection on the street level folks, the writers, the creators. Not a reflection on
them
at all.
But he's not turning it into like a list.
They work and they do good work in spite of all this kind of chaos right now. But I will say, and Farrow takes a lot of credit for this, the decision to fire photographers at the Sun-Times was largely Farrow's doing. So to say that he doesn't necessarily affect the content has not always been true in the past. And that is always the concern for me. And I think that's why people have such a visceral reaction to things like Trunk, where it seems like there was a lot of effort and maybe unnecessary to do in things like rebranding the name of a company and creating a new logo, and not so much in the actual street-level journalism. To, again, give credit where it's due, Vasquez says that they will be giving raises to journalists, which is fantastic. You know, some questions have been raised. How many people do you have to lay off to give everybody that's left a raise?
Yeah.
I take them at their word that third quarter, people are going to see raises. It's important. Again, you know, I've spent a lot of time in this building, and there are plenty of people here who haven't gotten a raise in a really long time, and they deserve it. So, you know, if nothing else, I'm glad to see that happen, and we'll kind of wait to see if things play out differently than they did at Sun-Times.
Scott Smith, our new media contributor here on The Download. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. I do want to talk about Ringer because I think that that's a bigger story than just about a new sports site from Bill Simmons. We'll continue our conversation with Scott after the break. Stay with us. It's Download here on WGN Radio. In studio with me, Scott Smith, our new media contributor. I just like, you're not even new. It's been a year now. But
yeah, I
just
thought
like
it, last time I, like I was that. Here, we just like we'd be the old new.
It's so clever. Yeah. Old new.
The old new media too. Contributor.
Throwback.
Yeah. The retro new media contributor. I wear suspenders and a pork pie hat.
Ringer. I love this. So Bill Simmons, who was the longtime columnist who turned to Grantland, and he became an ESPN sensation, left ESPN, and Grantland was closed, and now is starting up a new site called Ringer.
Right. So they launched this month. It's pretty sports heavy, as you might imagine. Bill Simmons obviously making his bones on his association with ESPN, brought some Grantland people over, hired some new people. This is really interesting from as a media story because the site is essentially one of the first sites that's taken this sort of new model of what they call distributed content and embraced it. So the idea is not so much that, you know, we know that people get to news and content through search, you know, going to Google and social media, going to Facebook, going to Twitter and being directed there. Very few people kind of go to a typical homepage anymore.
Right.
You know, most people don't get the web portal of old and get directed to content. You know, they're really pushed there by Facebook and things people post. And so The Ringer is kind of taking that model. The main website that they have is on a site called, or a platform, if you will, called Medium. Which prior to now has been this sort of place where CEOs or celebrities or what have you go to put their big think piece out there or their, you know.
Yeah, it's not attached to any sort of website. It's its own website.
Yeah, it's kind of like a WordPress in the way that it's, you know, essentially just the op-ed pages for the internet, if you will.
Right.
But they are now moving into this idea that they're going to be a platform. And so what they want to do is they want to host big media brands. And so they approached Bill Simmons when he had left ESPN and says, look, we want to host whatever your new thing is, and what it's beyond just a website. It is more of a network, really. There are 8 podcasts, some around sports, some around pop culture. He also has an HBO show, Any Given Wednesday, that he's going to be appearing on, and there's a little bit of a cross-promotion aspect there.
Now, the big story here is that he has come out on Twitter and other places, and he said, it's 2016. I don't need ESPN anymore. You can publish anywhere in these days, Medium, and that's what he's talking about,
right?
And people will find you. You don't need the affiliate or the big brand anymore.
And theoretically, that's true, right? Like, anybody can post into these spaces. You know, anybody can post a thing on Medium. Anybody can post a thing on Facebook, but it still requires you to have an audience big enough to amplify it out. You know, I worked at TouchVision up until January of this year. They shut down. You know, I have a lot of experience in building up a media brand from nothing, along with the great team that we had. And we had some incredibly talented people, all of whom had like audiences. You know, they had spent some time in news media themselves. And I can tell you, it is not easy to get people familiar with a new brand and get them to pay attention to your content. Almost any news brand that's launching in 2016 is going to need some kind of paid media against it. You know, promoting posts on Facebook, you know, doing paid search, all that kind of thing. What's strange about the things that Bill Simmons has been saying is that he essentially completely ignores the fact that he's been on, you know, an ESPN-hosted site and had all the benefits of being on ESPN, you know, broadcast and all that kind of stuff, and is essentially saying, like, I am completely new to this media landscape.
Anyone
and I'm launching
can do it.
This completely new thing.
Which is
and
not,
I don't
not
have
true.
Like all of this PR story that like Grantland closed and we're launching this new thing.
And he's got 5 million or so Twitter followers, a lot of that obviously from his days at ESPN. So
exactly.
But I mean, this is the grand tradition of media celebrities. We've had celebrities move and start their own startups just in the recent time. But I think about television, I mean, you know, you almost get a gig in television if you had another gig. So, I mean, it does make sense that he could go out on his own and make something.
Yeah, it's absolutely possible for him to go out on his own and make something. But he's essentially saying if you have good content, people are going to find it no matter who you are and where you are. But again, completely ignoring who he is, which is Bill Simmons, formerly of Grantland, formerly of ESPN, right. And where he is, which is on HBO and on Medium, which has essentially... you know, entered into a revenue sharing agreement with them. So they're going to use the power of their platform that they've developed over a while to throw, you know, a bunch of traffic their way and do what they can to amplify that content. So, you know, this is the equivalent of, you know, somebody wakes up on third base and they think they hit a triple. You know, this does not, again, take away anything from Bill, the quality writers that they have, the quality work that he does. He is great. He does great work. He is a compelling person, and I think the site, you know, the stuff they've started to post is all very, you know, rich and interesting and compelling. But again, it's, you know, getting a lot of attention, but it's because he both has this PR backstory, he has a history of being sort of built up as a, you know, mini media empire already, and is now launching a new thing. Most people who are launching new media brands from the start do not have any of the audience or, you know, sort of platform help that he does.
Scott Smith, our old, new, retro, throwback.
Yeah, retro. Don't say I'm old because that's not complimentary.
Throwback 2.0, 3.0, new media contributor. We didn't get a chance to talk about Ebony Jett, which I do want to talk to, but maybe I'll figure out how to talk about that. That's so interesting to me, selling Ebony Jett.
I'll just start up a Periscope app and we'll just do it real
we'll
quick
just do
in
it
the
real
break.
Quick. And then and others. Scott, thanks for coming in. And you got to come back because we got so much more to talk about.
Always good to be here.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight at the big table is a Hall of Famer, former first baseman for the Chicago White Sox. Frank Thomas is one of Chicago's sports legends. The Big Hurt is not only in the Hall of Fame, but he's got a statue. He has a statue at the U.S. Cellular Field. Frank Thomas retired from baseball back in 2009, but he's been busy since. He's working in food and beverage. He's got his own Big Hurt beer. He also has his own restaurant, the Big Hurt Brew House in Berwyn. And now... he's an author. He was an author before, but his latest is a cookbook out in time for Father's Day. It's called The Big Hurt's Guide to Barbecue and Grilling, recipe from my backyard to yours. Frank Thomas will be signing books at Barbara's Booksellers at Willis Tower. That's tomorrow at 11:30 in the morning. And then he's also going to be signing books out in Orland Park at Barnes & Noble. That's at 7 o'clock. Frank Thomas, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Good to see you. You know, I mean, talk about your relationship to food. I mean, I think about you, and I'm like, as an athlete, I'm like, grilling and barbecue is probably not part of the diet of a professional athlete. But talk about, I mean, you've been pretty busy after retiring with food.
Well, Justin, let me break it to you. Beer, barbecue, and just food in general is part of a baseball player's life.
Don't ruin it for us.
I'm not going to ruin it for you, but barbecue for me has been my entire life.
Really?
I grew up down south in Georgia, and, mm-hmm. you know, if the grill's not going, you know, something's wrong on the weekend. Barbecue is barbecue. We love our barbecue down south, and I had a dad who would barbecue every Saturday. So, you know, doing food has been a part of my life forever. I have three sisters and a mother. So they were always constantly cooking. I was a baby of the family, so I'm always in the kitchen watching my mom and my sisters cook and my dad grilling outside on the weekends.
When you came to Chicago to play for the White Sox, what did you think? I mean, obviously coming up north, a different kind of barbecue than what was being done in Georgia. What was your thought when you came here to town?
You know, it was different, you know, because we're smoke kings down there. We're smoke you out. The barbecue has got to, you know, be done a 12-hour period of day to get the barbecue right. My dad used to drive me crazy. He started way early in the morning. We couldn't eat till like 6:30 in the evening time. So it was one of those things like, can you just hurry this process up? But you got up north and most people say, oh, you should be done in 4 hours. You know, I'm like, I don't know what kind of barbecue it is, but, you know, I'm very adjustable. Food is food. I like to eat all food.
Let me ask you, as a baseball player, I mean, we joke about barbecue and beer, but I mean, for you to be able to play at that high level, I mean, did you have to put some of that stuff to the side, at least when you were during the season? I mean, when I think of football players and, you know, and baseball players as well, I mean, there is some sort of regimen diet to it, right?
Oh, you have to, because it's a 162-game schedule. There's your ups and downs. But for me, I always had an advantage because I worked so hard, you know, 24/7 and in the off season. You know, I dedicated my off season to training. So the seasons for me were very easy. I never ran out of gas. And that's why I was always a slow starter. You know, April and May, you know, I'm not really going that well. But catch me at the end of May throughout the rest of the season, I was like a well-oiled machine throughout my career.
I'm just curious. So the teams that you've played on, Oakland, Toronto, here in Chicago, I mean, did they organize meals for the players, or was it on your own to sort of figure out how to eat and play at the professional level?
You know, my first, I would say, 7-8 years, there was no regimen with food. Then all of a sudden, people got smart. Then you start, the dietitians came in. You had chefs. You had prepared meals. If you go to a clubhouse now, I don't even recognize the place. They got full-time chefs, and they can't have sweet. They can't have anything in the clubhouse. Maybe I just don't understand what's going on with that. You know, I think most of the guys sneak their food before they get to the ballpark, because now everything is health conscious. It's a different world now over the last five years.
Did you notice a difference after the first 7 years of when you finally got to the point where it's like, okay, let's get you on a regimen? Did you notice a difference as an athlete?
Oh, yeah. We used to watch guys come in all the time with hot dogs and whatever else to play a game. And, you know, I would say like 8 years of my career, like the trainer's like, no, you can't have that in the clubhouse, blah, 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 blah. You know, so guys would go out and eat before they got to the clubhouse, because 8 to 10 years into my career, you could see the total change of dietitians and health-conscious minds in the locker room.
You know, we're talking about the Big Hertz Guide to BBQ and Grilling. I'm interested in what do you see as the type of barbecue that's represented in this book? Because a lot of it is, like you talked about growing up in Georgia, but it does have sort of a different kind of feel. There's some Alabama barbecue in here. There's obviously a lot of different styles. What does Frank Thomas's cookbook
play? Well, that's purposely done, because, you know, my first 18 years was down south. And the rest of my years, I've been all over the country. I've lived up west for 15 years. You know, I've lived in the Midwest for 20 years. It's one of those things now that you see the different coast of food in that cookbook. I got some southern barbecue in there, but I got some Midwestern barbecue in there too. And also, we got a little western grilling out there also. You know, I think with all the big cook-offs they have across the country nowadays, mm-hmm. you get the infusion of talent throughout the coast, that everybody starts to steal off everybody's recipes nationwide. And it's so true.
Did you think you'd get into food and beverage after you retired? Because we all know about your music career. I mean, mm-hmm. you were a music producer and recording artist.
Well, you know what got me into it is the beer, you know, because I was launching Big Hurt Beer. And then I'm like, wait a minute, this beer needs a home. So that's how I came up with the Big Hurt Brew House. You know, the Big Hurt Brew House was going to be a place that you can come and enjoy Big Hurt beer. And we had to have food. So, you know, me being a foodie anyway, you know, loving food, it was easy for me to do that. You know, I stay in touch with my chefs now about what we're going to have on the menu. Some work, some don't. You know, the people let you know what's good and what's bad. So it's a learning process. It's not that old yet. It's almost 2 years old,
right,
Big Hurt
right.
Brew House. So, you know, we've been there, you know, trying to find our niche. But the beer has been excellent, and the people, we seem to have a little fan base out there in Berwyn now.
You see a lot of the 85 Bears and the other Hall of Famers in town have gotten into the restaurant business, most notably Mike Ditka, and mm-hmm. then you see Steve McMichael's got the place mm-hmm. Out in Romeoville. But, I mean, do you see Chicagoans gravitating to restaurants that are run or at least have the celebrity and sports guy's name on it?
Well, Chicago's a special town. It's a sports town. It's the best sports town in the country for me, and I've been everywhere. But Chicago sports is prime time, and they really attracted their stars and for many, many years on. You know, Mike Ditka, he's the true icon in the city. You know, everything he's touched is turned into gold. And if you go to Ditka's, you love their steaks, you love their chops, and Mike's been great. You know, I've gotten to meet Mike many times, and he's fabulous to me.
I was going to say, do you say that as Mike Ditka, the coach and the athlete, or do you say it as the businessman?
Everything, total. You know, the athlete, the coach, the restaurants, I mean, his wine, you know, he's been tremendous.
We're talking with Frank Thomas. His new cookbook is out, The Big Hurts Guide to Barbecue and Grilling, Recipes from My Backyard to Yours. We'll take a quick break. We'll continue with Frank Thomas here on The Download. Stay with us. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, The Big Hurt, Frank Thomas here. He's got a new cookbook out, The Big Hurt's Guide to Barbecue and Grilling, recipes from my backyard to yours. He's going to be signing books at Barbara's Best Sellers at Willis Tower. For all of you here, that's the Sears Tower. Mm-hmm. That'll be tomorrow at 11:30. And then tomorrow night, he's going to be out in Orland Park at the Barnes & Noble at 7 o'clock. This is just in time for Father's Day. I know you're a father. What does Father's Day mean to you as The Big Hurt?
It's the toughest day of the year for me now because I lost my father quite a few years ago, and, you know, he was my best friend. So it's always a special day for me. And now that I got my own kids, you know, it's one of those days I really hold on to my kids because I know what my dad meant to me.
Right.
And I want to be that same person for my kids.
And a lot of what you talked about introducing to food came from your father.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
You know where Dad's going to be on Saturday. He was going to be outside in the backyard with his big, huge smoker, you know, smoking ribs, a barbecue chicken, or sometime had a little beef out there, whatever he decided to put out there, you know, a Boston butt. I mean, you know, you guys don't know much about that, but, you know, whatever my dad wanted on that grill, it was going to happen on Saturday. He would sit out there and his friends would come over and they would sit there for hours because it was a long process to cook that food.
You know, there's so much that's made of athletes and their relationships to their fathers because, you know, it's a tough business. You get into the business side, you have agents and you have other people around you all the time, but the people that you trust are family. Talk about your relationship with your dad when it came to being a professional athlete.
Well, I trusted my dad with everything because he was the one that pushed me to do sports. You know, I wanted to be an athlete, but my dad pushed me to be an athlete. And it's okay to be pushed because you know, I really wanted it, but once I started, my dad was like, either you're going to do this or you're not. So there was no going backwards. He would push me, he would take me all my practices, he would do all of that, he would be at every game. So I look at my little Frankie now and I come to the games, and every time he does something on the field, he's looking for me to make sure, or his mom to make sure that we're watching what he was doing. And I was the same way as a kid, so it's amazing.
Do you find yourself doing the same thing as a dad? I mean, is
not
this,
at all.
No,
not at all.
You're not pushing?
I've achieved so much in pro sports that was only a dream, and to make that happen and to make it happen at a huge level that I could only dream about. I don't want to push him that much.
Right.
But little Frankie, he's an athlete. He wants to be pushed. So I'm proud of him right now, and I'm really pushing him to be an athlete. 7 years old, and you just tell he wants this, just like I did at that age.
You know, we hear so much about athletes, especially when they retire. They say, well, I want to spend more time with my children, right? Mm-hmm. Being in retirement since 2009, you've had an opportunity to do that just mm-hmm. because, you know, you're not playing baseball 162 games a year and training and all that kind of stuff. Do you see it as retirement being a chance to spend more time with your family, or did you have a nice family balance when you were playing baseball?
I've always had a good balance. I've got more free time now because now basically my job is during baseball season, and then I have those off season off just like I did in baseball, but it's not training like it used to be. Now I can relax and do a lot with the family and the kids and spend more time at the ballpark or wherever they want to be. If it's basketball, if it's football, or the baseball, I mean, I got my kid doing something. So I get to spend a lot more free time, you know, 4 months a year than I did when I played. So it means a lot to my kids.
Okay, so let's talk about you having time now after retirement. When you retired in 2009, take us back to that moment and what were your hopes and your fears, you know, as a retired, because a lot of people listening to this right now, they've gone through retirement. They've, mm-hmm. they've worked at their job. I mean, but a professional athlete, especially one who's accomplished what you have, was it tough to walk away from the game?
Yeah, it was, because I really thought there was one more team that I could play for. You know, you never could dream or imagine when you have a career like I had that the phone's going to stop ringing eventually. And that's one thing that Harold Baines told me earlier in my career. Harold said, oh, you're going to know when it's over. When that phone stops ringing, you're going to know it's over. You know, I listened to Harold. He played till he was 42, and he was right. You know, I had injured knee and ankle at the same time at the end of my career. It was done. It was the first time I had a knee injury. So I had a bad ankle for a long time, but you combine that with the knee. Yeah.
Did you see that as a start of a new career for you? I mean, obviously becoming a businessman and working in different fields?
Mm-hmm. It's scary. It's like coming out of the military. Everything's been so planned for you for 20 years of your life, and now you're back to reality. You're back in the real world. But for me, I'm not afraid of any of that because I've always been a worker. So whatever I try to put my hands on now, I'm willing to work for it and give it an honest go. And that's very important to me.
You still have a relationship with the Chicago White Sox.
Yes. I
mean, you play the same role.
Just came back this year.
Yep.
Just came back this year as an ambassador.
Talk about that. I mean, for you, how special is it to be a part of the Chicago White Sox organization after retiring?
You know, it feels good because I'm kind of away in my new role. I'm not like hands-on in the player side of things, but now we're doing sponsorship and marketing stuff. It's cool. You know, I'm not there all the time, But when they need me, you know, it's great to be there with the sponsors and the people that really make this organization go financially. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's an honor to be back with the team. But I'm open to whatever they need. You know, they got, like, they're having tough times now. You know, if they really wanted to call me and say, hey, we need you to help this player or something like that, I would do it. You know, I just feel inclined to do those things because I learned a lot over the last 20 years about this game of baseball.
I was going to say, you've learned a lot about baseball as a player, as someone after playing. I mean, obviously a Hall of Famer. I mean, are you learning about the other side of the game, the financial side, the management side, the side that doesn't get as much of the hip-hop hooray?
Well, I keep myself busy. You know, part-time I'm with Fox Sports and national level, so I keep up with all the teams. So I'm watching this game, you know, at a whole nother level. For me, for so many years, it was all about Chicago. But now I got to mm-hmm. watch every team to keep up, to talk about it on TV. So, you know, I love the game of baseball. It's still there. I'm still a huge part because now I'm paying attention more than I ever did as a player.
Frank Thomas is my guest tonight. He's the author of the new cookbook, The Big Hertz Guide to Barbecue and Grilling, Recipes from My Backyard to Yours. He's going to be signing books at Barbara's Bestsellers at Willis Tower tomorrow at 11:30, and then on Friday, tomorrow night, at 7 o'clock in Orland Park at Barnes & Noble. We'll take a quick break for the news, and we come back more with Frank Thomas. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, the Big Hurt. I like Big Frank.
You like Big Frank?
Yeah, I'm a Big Frank guy.
It started Big Frank.
I know, I like that.
And then Hulk stumbled on that Big Hurt. And it's stuck.
Frank Thomas is my guest in studio. He's the author of the cookbook, The Big Hertz Guide to Barbecue and Grilling, Recipes from My Backyard to Yours. He's going to be signing the book tomorrow at Willis Tower at the Barbara's Bestseller there at 11:30 a.m. And then tomorrow night he's going to be in Orland Park at Barnes & Noble at 7 o'clock. The White Sox are scuffling a little bit. I mean, they've had a little bit of success, you know, at the beginning of the year, and they've had a tough time. As a former player, when a team goes through what the White Sox are going through currently, what's in your head? What mentally do you have to do to be a part of that?
You know, I haven't seen this happen, but so many times, you know, to start off that great, it wasn't good. It was great. To scuffle the way they have in May and mid-June, I don't understand it. This team is too good for that. I think they're put together very well with speed, defense, enough veterans, enough youth. I just don't understand what's going on. I've seen a couple teams do this. I remember the Kansas City Royals many years ago. They had a first half to remember. In the second half, they lost more games than anybody. I saw the Boston Red Sox stumble down in the last month and a half of the season a few years ago. But besides that, I haven't seen the team just totally collapse. And it's not really a total collapse because you got so much time to clean this up. Mm-hmm. And I think the organization right now has been very proactive, you know, to make changes on this team. They're getting, you know, we had to let go Jimmy Rollins, a potential Hall of Fame player. But he's aging, and you got this new kid, Tim Anderson, who's a dynamite prospect, who's already, you know, provided a spark to the team. He has the speed and defense mm-hmm. and the way he can hit. As a young player, I mean, that's going to help this team in the near future. Because you watch the Cubs, you saw how they built their team over the last 3 years. You know, great young players, and they're already becoming superstars. So I'm sure we took a roll out of their book a little bit with that because, you know, Tim Anderson is a kid that could be that future star of the team. But we also got some other younger players and pitchers that could be superstars here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, we'll
see them grow up in our eyes.
Yeah. All right, so as a player, and you're in that situation where you're going through a losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked to Hawk was on last week, and we talked about how much of this game is mental and how much of it is physical. For you as a player who've gone through losing streaks, how much of it is mental?
It's very mental. It becomes contagious. Just like you hear this all the time, hitting is contagion, pitching is contagion. It really is. But it's more of a positive thinking or a negative thinking. I think right now this team is thinking very negatively. Outwardly, they said, oh, we're okay. But inside, the first couple of innings, anything goes bad, they're like, uh-oh, here we go again. And you got to find a way with this team to really start thinking positive for 9 straight innings. They got plenty of time to clear this thing up. It's mid-June. They need another hot streak. They can get another 20 out of 30. They're right back where they were when they started the season.
Are there moments when you see the White Sox jump out of the gate like they did? Are those the moments where you're like, oh, man, I wish I was still playing baseball? That looks so fun. I mean, for you now as Frank Thomas retired, you're like, oh, I want to be a part of that.
As a pro athlete, it's always in your blood. You always remember the good times of playing the game of sports. You never want to let it go. But sooner or later, you have to realize it's over. And I think it's been long enough for me since 2009. It's 2016 now to realize that it's over. I was just happy with this team because of what has happened over the last 3 years. You know, they came out with a total different ball club and really turned it on in April. They were the biggest surprise in April. But this team, like I said, is not done yet. They're going to be proactive. There's going to be some more trades. Who knows? If Justin Morneau's come back, we just signed him last week, that guy can thump. If he can come back 80%, it's going to be a lift to this ball club.
He thumped a lot when you were playing.
We need a little more thump from the left side. I just hope he can come back and be 80% of the Justin Morneau we know.
Okay, so here you are, like you just said, 6 years after retirement. Why Chicago? I mean, you grew up in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I mean, you spent time on the West Coast. You've lived on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Why set up shop here? Why set up a business here in Chicago?
Well, I'm not here 100% of the time. I'm here probably 70% of the time. The Big Herb Brewhouse just happened. The wonderful city of Berwyn gave me an excellent opportunity to own a piece of Chicago, and that's the Big Herb Brewhouse. So that was an easy decision for me with what Berwyn did for me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I try to stay here 6-7 months a year, and then I try to get some warmth
in
certain months of the year. Because we all know as Chicago is here, it gets miserable here.
Yeah.
So I've been out, you know, I lived in Vegas for 14 years. I still try to, you know, keep a little shop out there.
You know, it was very exciting for Sox fans when you went into the hall to be a Sox, to mm-hmm. White Sox, you know, that kind of pageantry of picking a team, things like that. But in your heart, I mean, you have played a lot of different places. I mean, do you have a loyalty to Chicago over the other cities that you played in?
Oh, yeah. Well, Chicago, everybody knows I'm a Chicago guy. You know, I played year and a half Oakland, year and a half in Toronto.
Right.
I mean, I love the organizations, what they did for me, but I'm a Chicago guy. And that's just the way it is. And then when it came up to what hat you're going to wear at the Hall of Fame, it was no question for me. I mean, Chicago has been so great to me. The fans have been unbelievable. The fans have made me who I am in this mm-hmm. city. And it continues to grow. I mean, anywhere I go in this city, people, hey, Big Hurt, what's going on? I mean, it's been a long time. And they still love and respect me, and I love and respect them, too. So I love this town. This has been so great for me.
Talk about, like, what's great about Chicago? I mean, you've been a part of this town for a couple decades now. What is it about this city that you think makes it tick?
It's a very fair city. It can be a tough city. You know, that's one thing about being a great player in this town for a long time. There's ups, there's downs. And when I had those ups, it was great. But when I had those downs, it was brutal. You know, the fans are very fair and they're honest. They're brutally honest. When I was bad, they let me know how bad I was. You know, there was times that I remember vividly talking to Ozzie Guillen on the bench, and he was like messing with me, like, watch when you get that toe on that first step and watch the boos go up, you know? So it's one of those things that they're brutally honest, but you come to love and respect it. And I spent 16 wonderful years here, so I wrote a lot more high times than I did low times, but. You got to love people that are brutally honest and to show you the kindness and respect they have over all these years.
Now, last time I talked to you, I fact-checked your Wikipedia page, and it was a different place. And one of the things that we talked about that I was talking to Pete about, and he didn't believe it, is that you are credited with being the athlete that started the walk-up music, the track that comes out. You know, now every player uses it where they play a snippet of a pop song or whatever, and you were the first athlete to actually do that.
Well, you know, it was a couple of them at the same time. It was Griffey Jr. was one, too. It was one of those things that year, that's when it really started. Seattle started playing music, and I'm like, wait a minute, we should do this in Chicago. You know, Chicago's known for music. So after that series, I flipped it back to Chicago, started playing music, going up to the plate, and the fans really liked it. You know, next thing you know, everyone is playing music. You know, because it's cool, and it relaxes you. Music is the key to the zone in all sports. And I know a lot of people don't know that, but when you're relaxed going up to the plate, listening to your favorite song, any relaxation going to hit a baseball is more than enough for anyone. And I'm happy that we were one of the pioneers of that.
Right.
But I think Griffey Jr. gets a lot of credit, too, because Seattle started it for him.
Yeah, Seattle.
But, yeah,
different market, Frank.
It started that year, though. It started that year.
Where you were?
And I think it was 92.
Call Me Big Papa was the song that you were coming out
to? It was one of my songs. Yeah. But, you know, I always changed, like, every 3 months. I wanted the hottest jam that was always going on that everybody was crazy about. That was my thing. Never wanted a song to get stale. I wanted the hottest song that was going on at the time. That gets the ballpark buzzing.
There you go. Frank Thomas, the new cookbook, The Big Hurt's Guide to Barbecue and Grilling, Recipes from My Backyard to Yours. He's going to be signing his book tomorrow at the Willis Tower, Sears Tower, at Barbara's Bestsellers at 11:30 a.m. And then he's also going to be out in Orland Park at the Barnes & Noble at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Frank Thomas, thanks for being my guest tonight.
My pleasure. And all my eaters come out there. This book is timeless and priceless. You can keep these recipes forever. They're very easy to execute. I've been cooking out of the book now for about a month, and I'm really loving this book. So come out and enjoy the signing, and thanks, Chicago, again, for having me once again.
Coming up here on the download, so much good stuff. Can you hear that in the background? Can you hear? Listen. Shh. Do you hear that?
Do I hear bagpipers?
Yes. The bagpipers from the Highland Games in Itasca, which will be up here, the 30th annual festival, which is coming up here, are here, and they're warming up in the green room, and I can hear them. They've got the door shut, and it's completely just sort of wafting through the air here in the studio.
They're loud.
I love it. I don't know how we're going to mic that.
I don't think you need to.
So we just put them in the room and just be like...
Turn on a mic somewhere. I think we'll be good.
I love this week's been so great when it comes to sort of eclectic music. We had a Flamenco Passion on.
Yeah,
that
about
was
that?
So good. Earlier in the week, we had the band, the rock band on, which was great. Now some Scottish bagpipes. I love it. Funky Fred Wesley was on last week. James Brown. I mean, there's so much great stuff.
Too much. Too much.
Frank Thomas. Frank Thomas is great. He was good, you know. Frank, I love that. I mean, he won't take full credit for it because there's probably other athletes that were doing it, but a lot of people don't know he was the walk-up guy.
Giving some credit to Griffey Jr.
Yeah. You know what? Okay. Come on, Frank. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Eugene Merman's going to be here. Great stand-up comedian. Eugene Merman is opening for Flight of the Conchords, who are coming to town. Last week was one of those weekends where everything we talked about was how many festivals were in town, where it just doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Flight of the Conchords are going to be at Millennium Park on Sunday. Eugene Merman is opening. He played a role on the Flight of the Conchords show that was on HBO. Now, Eugene Merman is on Bob's Burgers, which surprisingly is, and I don't mean that in any sort of backhanded way, it is really, really good. And when I say surprising is I thought it was more in the guise of Family Guy, but it's got that edge, but it's still good for families. Like if you sit down and try to watch Family Guy with a kid, you quickly realize they're not getting half of this stuff. It's not for them.
Yeah.
But Bob's Burgers is a little bit more in the middle. They got some really great, John Benjamin's on that show.
Yeah.
Kristen Schaal's on that show. Jenny Slate, a lot of comedians from New York City are on that show, and Eugene Merman plays Gene on the show. It's a great character, one of the boy, and he'll join us coming up. Also, Tim Simons, who plays Jonah Ryan on the hit show Veep. If you watch Veep, I think we've had enough time for spoilers. If you haven't gotten it to by Thursday, aren't you like, I mean, all right?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, sometimes that happens to me where I get behind, but Jonah Ryan, it's an easy plot line. If you've been watching Jonah Ryan, who used to be the White House aide, who was kind of a hanger-on, despicable character. They all are kind of on that show. They needed to put up a dummy candidate for Congress in New Hampshire, and they chose Jonah Ryan, and he's been hilarious on the campaign trail. One thing leads to another. He becomes the congressman for the state of New Hampshire, and his acceptance speech, which is the end of the episode where they're like, I can't believe we got, Dan turns to Amy or whatever, says, I can't believe that we got Jonah Ryan elected to Congress. And then they go to the podium. He's like, a lot of people remember from high school, you, Joe, thought I'd be nothing, huh? Look at me now. And they're like, and then they look at each other. I can't believe we did this. It was a really great scene.
It's perfect. That's it's so perfect.
It is, man.
For Jonah.
It's such a great show overall. I mean, that show just continues to get better.
And how about all the people from Chicago that are on it? Virtually everybody.
I didn't recognize this until we started doing the prep on it, but Tim Simons spent a good 8 or 9 years in Chicago theater, Off Loop Theater. So we'll talk to him about that as well coming up. And like I said, bagpipes are here. I'm very excited about this. This is the 30th anniversary of the Scottish Festival and Highland Games. It's going to be at Hamilton Lakes in Itasca coming up. I've never been. 17th and 18th. We're going to talk to the Chicago Scots and also to Bagpiper and get some live music here in studio.
Terrific.
Essentially, I mean, when I hear the bagpipes, man, you got to stand up, right? Like, I feel like there's just so much honor in it.
Yeah.
It's really hard to sit down and be like, oh, I'm going to enjoy this. No, I stand up and salute. I don't even know who I'm saluting. But I just feel like I had some friends who ended their wedding
where I now pronounce you man and wife, and they kicked open the doors in the back of the church, and it was like, it was a great moment.
Yeah. I guess I should have learned this before, but I assume this is a Scottish instrument. Well, Ireland, I think of St. Patrick's Day, and I think of the bagpipes, because we always try to find a bar where, you know, where they always play, yeah.
Oh, I mean, maybe someone could text and tell us, but I think that it is Scottish.
I mean, so obviously very similar.
Yeah.
Or close. But yeah, just the...
I think they're indigenous to Scotland, I think, because... And I've been 2 or 3 years where I have been in Scotland. You know, I went to Edinburgh for the Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
And bagpipers are a big part of that festival, Scottish tradition. You know, they have the Edinburgh Castle, and in it they have the tattoo, which is essentially the big performance. It's almost like a military performance they would do nightly, and they'd have fireworks and bagpipes and cannons and things like that, and formations and kilts, haggis,
all the way down.
Yeah,
but it was really, 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 it was awesome. Like to be there and sort of soak in that culture, especially in a castle. The Edinburgh Castle is amazing. So I'm looking forward to that. So, yeah, someone just texted in 630 saying, I can hear the bagpipe. I'm like, you're right. See?
It's one bagpipe?
It is, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's loud.
It's loud. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you wake us up. 773 says about Frank Thomas, you know, Berwyn's not Chicago.
Right.
Because I that's what I wrote back. I'm like, right, yeah, I think we all know that. No one's making a mistake. And I thought, well, you made a mistake, meaning me, that I asked Frank Thomas at the end there, what's it like to set up business in Chicago to come back to Chicago B? You know, and whether that be Mongo's Place in Romeoville or Aurora or the Roundhouse, you know, like whatever it is, I would still refer that to coming back to Chicago.
Yeah, I would too.
Not say, what's it like coming back to Berwyn? And nothing against Berwyn, but I would say that to anybody. I would say it if Ryan Braun set up his Ryan Braun Steakhouse in Delavan, Wisconsin, and I was interviewing him, I'd say, what's it like to come back to Wisconsin? What's it like to come back to Milwaukee?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, like instead of setting up shop in Georgia or wherever he's from, you know, where Frank's from, you say Chicago. I would say Chicago. I don't think they're
right. I didn't ask him what suburb he was in Georgia.
Can we do just a little off docket, the worst regarding this subject that we've just waded into?
Yeah.
When I was a Disney cast member during college and then after I graduated.
Can I pause for a second?
Yeah.
You're burying the lead there.
We'll get to that in just a second.
Big table with Rob Martyr.
You know that on the name tags of the Disney employees, cast members, they put your city of origin, you know, so you can relate to the guests as they come by. I put Chicago, Illinois, meaning the Chicago area. Yeah. I grew up in Glenview, and I'm very proud of where I grew up. A woman who was also down there on the internship at the same time that I was from Chicago proper.
She's like, I went to Latin.
She goes, well, where are you from? And I said, well, I'm from Glenview. You know that's not Chicago.
Get out of here.
I said, I realize that,
and
sweetheart,
go over and reorganize the stuff down.
it's incredible. And then, you know, and then those in the burbs get all, you know, uppity about it as well.
About that. I never care. I live in Chicago proper. I'm somewhere else, I say, where are you from? If they say, I have enough respect for the region. So if somebody said to me, I'm from Chicago, go whereabouts? And they said Glenview. I'm like, oh, I love Glenview.
Yeah.
I know Glenview. They got that cool fake mall out there.
It used to be
an Air Force base, but now it's like a fake mall.
Glenview. Oh, you mean the suburb that gave away the Naval Air Force base.
Yeah, right.
They didn't hold an auction for it. They just simply gave it away to a developer. Oh, with tax incentives, by the way.
Yeah, you got Restoration Hardware out there. Okay. Got a bunch of houses out there that used to be a naval base.
It's a Chicago area, you know what I mean?
See, I pride myself, and it has nothing to do with being a talk show host. I love having a nugget or a piece of information about all the towns in the region. If I can be that guy at a party, and it's gonna be so nauseating when I get older. Oh, you know, it's interesting about Itasca.
Because they've got, and they'll be like, all right, old man, get out of here, man. Stop
and that rarely comes up in conversation.
Yeah, right.
Interesting Itasca.
Let me, you know, so interesting about Joliet, you know, they named, and they'll be like, all right, Kaufman, who invited this guy?
But I want to have that. And the one great thing about being involved with the download is I feel like I will get that. I mean, each and every segment that comes in here, we learn something new about a town or an area. So to me, it's almost, it's better for the old, are you from Chicago or are you from a specific town? I'd rather say Chicago, where are you from, town, and then I can deliver that punchline. Whack. Gotcha on one. Try it. Pete, give me one. Hey, Nate, where are you from?
Oh, here. Hey. You want me? Wait,
what's the matter with you? What's this guy's problem?
You want me to do this line? The line?
Yeah.
Go ahead. You say, hey.
Oh, I'll say, hey, where are you from?
Okay. Naperville.
Oh, Naperville. They got great restoration hardware out there.
Yeah, Naperville, no. Boasting the highest per capita income of most of the towns in Cook County. That,
I would say, oh, nice little river walk.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's what I would start with. I'd lead with the river walk and then be like, you guys got a college out there, right? They do. They've got like a North Central
College. North Central,
college.
Yeah.
Is that, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, try me, Rob, try me.
Hey, Justin, where are you from?
Oh, wait, the other way.
Or no, wait, yeah, are we reversing roles already?
Hey, Rob, where are you from?
I'm from Glenview.
Oh, where did Glenview? Give me a different one. Give me a different one.
All right, from the Chicago area, yeah.
And where are you from? Where specifically?
Yeah, Skokie.
Oh, I love Skokie. They got Kaufman's Bagels up there, right?
Do they?
Yeah. That's a great place.
All right.
Skokie Swift, the yellow line.
Yeah.
Right? See, it's like a party trick. I should, 312-981-7200 if you want me to come to your party and do this bit. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Eugene Mirman. He's going to join us, the comedian who is touring with Flight of the Conchords right now. They're going to be at Millennium Park on Sunday. Also, Timothy Simons, who is the man who plays Jonah Ryan on the hit HBO show Veep. That's coming up this hour. But first, this weekend, Itasca goes Scottish. It's the 30th anniversary of the Scottish Festival and Highland Games. It's going to take place on the 17th and 18th at Hamilton Lakes in Itasca. It's a festival that benefits Illinois' oldest charity, the Chicago Scots. There's going to be games, there's going to be food, and of course, bagpipes. Gus Noble is the president of the Chicago Scots, and he's here with us in studio. Gus, thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
And, of course, Brian Dodge, who is a bagpiper with Midlothian Scottish, and he's going to start us off tonight with a rendition of Scotland the Brave. Everybody, stand up. Right, some bagpipes here, Scotland the Brave. Thank you very much to Brian Dodge. Brian, you can take a seat up here. All right, thank you so much for being here, Gus. We appreciate it. The
pleasure.
Scottish Festival and Highland Games. Tell us about this.
It's a wonderful event for all the family. You can enjoy a little taste of Scotland without having to buy one of those expensive transatlantic tickets to fly you there. You can experience the best of Scotland right here in the Chicago area in the beautiful town of Itasca. And I was joking with somebody the other day, and I said, you know, there's this mythical town that we have in Scotland that appears once in a while, and of course it's called Brigadoon. Well, locally here in Illinois, we have a similar thing. It's a Scottish, or it's a town that turns Scottish for the day, and it's called Itasca. Sorry. But it's a wonderful event. You know, there's so much going on during the day, from the bagpiping that you just heard. Brian's part of Chicago's best pipe band, Midlothian Scottish, grade two pipe band. They're wonderful. They play all our events as the Chicago Scots, and we're very, very proud of them all. We have great dancing. We have sports, rugby, soccer. And the centerpiece of any Highland Games are the games themselves, the heavy athletics, that iconic caber toss that, you know, people say.
Yeah, tell me about this.
Are you really throwing a telephone pole end over end? And of course, we do it every morning after breakfast in Scotland. But literally, it's an event that all these heavy athletic events have very practical roots. And if you can turn this caber, which is it really does look like a telephone pole, if you can turn it end over end in a perfect throw, is when you run with it and it makes a complete rotation and falls at exactly 12 o'clock from the way you're facing. And the practicality of that is if you're trying to make a bridge across a stream, or if you're trying to put a ladder up on a wall and you can mm-hmm. do this, it becomes very, very practical.
That's the practical.
Right.
But let me ask you, I mean, for the festival, I mean, are you playing to a people with Scottish ancestry who are going to come here, who are living in Chicago, or are you playing to everyone come in and check out how this cultural phenomenon works?
Well, we always say that the festival is for everybody who is Scottish by birth, by heritage, or simply by inclination. So if you find something in Scottish culture that particularly interests you or enjoys you, it could be golf, it could be bagpiping, it could be whiskey, it could be train spotting, Sean Connery, you know, who knows what it is. There's something for everybody at this festival. And, you know, I was talking about heavy athletics, but there's also the dogs of Scotland. We have all these wonderful breeds of dogs, from terriers to collies, from Scottish deerhounds and so on. And then we thought, why do we stop with dogs? You know, let's add some Highland cattle there. So we've begun our own Scottish petting zoo, you know, here. We have Clydesdale horses now. And, you know, watch out, we'll have every manner of Scottish animal there, including Nessie. You know, we're trying to persuade Nessie to come
back. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk more about the Scottish Festival and Highland Games. It's your 30th anniversary. I'd love to talk about how it's evolved over the years. Also talk about the Scottish population here in the in the region. Gus Noble is the president of the Chicago Scots. Brian Dodge, of course, a bagpiper from Midlothian Scottish. We're going to have to hear some more of that coming up here. So let's take a break. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We're talking about the 30th anniversary of the Scottish Festival and Highland Games. In studio, Gus Noble, he's the president of the Chicago Scots, and Brian Dodge is here as well, a bagpiper with Midlothian Scottish. 30 years of this festival. Talk about the evolution of this festival. Where, you know, sort of how it's grown over the years.
It started really to give every aspect of Scottish culture a platform to be celebrated. All those different aspects of the games and the festival came together. And it's the one occasion, the one event of the year in our Scottish calendar where you can find everything kind of in one place. And through the years, through those 30 years, we've had various things that worked really well and people really enjoyed. And so we said, why don't we make the 30th year? Let's think of it as the greatest hits. You know, all the bits we really liked, we'll bring back for the year. So that's kind of what we're doing this year. Our favorite bands are playing, and our, you know, the various competitions and our vendors and all the things that happen. So it's a wonderful occasion for young and old. And because we've been going for 30 years, there are some people who were just kind of learning to walk when they came to their first festival, and now they're bringing their kids to the festival. And the most wonderful thing is you look kind of out, and when bands like Brian's are playing at the mass bands at the end of the day, when we've all celebrated together, and there's this magical moment where all these hundreds, perhaps sometimes 1,000 bagpipers and drummers will play these wonderful tunes together and march and play in unison. And you see a grandfather kind of look down at his grandson, and they look into one another's eyes, and there's this kind of magical moment where you think we're transcending generations and time here. And
that's great.
You know, I have my son now, he's 16 months old, so, you know, I'm really looking forward to standing there when all the pipers are playing and enjoying a moment with my wee boy.
How authentic is this games and festivals? When you know from the games and festivals that would happen in any town in Scotland, I mean, is that the idea to sort of bring to Illinois, bring to Itasca something that is authentic?
Absolutely, yeah. Our mission at the society, and we're, as you said, we're the oldest charity in Illinois, and our mission is to nourish Scottish identity. And we do that by really celebrating the things that inform our identities as Scots. And it could be an identity that you have through birth or by heritage, mm-hmm. or simply by inclination, as we're saying. But we really want to give people an experience of what it feels like to be Scottish and to be in a Scottish environment. And so the food is Scottish. You know, the vendors that you can go and buy things from are selling candy from Scotland, or you can buy the Scotland national football team jersey, or, you know, a kilt, or music from Scotland. And certainly the music that we're playing on our rock stage, with one exception, is all Scottish inspired.
Okay.
And the one exception is a local act that we're very proud to have as our kind of finale on Saturday is John Langford.
Oh yeah,
Sally,
we just had John on last week. Yeah,
great guy John, and John is originally from Wales, but yeah, he just went on tour of Scotland, so he plays music that really is celebratory of the Celtic identity. So I think he'll be a great addition.
Talk about Chicago Scots. This is, like as you said, the Illinois' oldest charity. What is the charity for?
We have something. It's a great, wonderful institution called the Scottish Home. It's an incredible elder care community located in North Riverside, and it's unique. There's no other Scottish organization that has something like the Scottish Home. And if you are really... if you feel powerful about the sense of home and the sense of family, then this is a place where your loved ones can come and still live with those senses in a vibrant way. You know, it's a place, as we say, where friends become family. And it's the most... I'm so proud of it. You know, as our Scottish community, I encourage everyone to kind of look to it and think, we have it here in Chicago, the world's only Scottish home. And we are supporting a very specific aspect of our charity this year, which is the development of a new way of caring for people with Alzheimer's disease. And it's a very important thing we do, because Alzheimer's disease, by the time the last of the baby boom generation reaches the age 65, will increase by 400%, the incidence of it. So we want to do something that is reflective and consistent with our culture of kith and kin, of friends and family, in a small way, get rid of every institutional feature in a nursing home and build something that is home, that is driven by that sense of family. And the Caledonian House is exactly that. The festival supports it.
Gus Noble's the president of Chicago Scots. Brian Dodge is here as well. He's a bagpiper with the Midlothian Scottish. You guys are in your 41st year. You just went to Scotland to compete. Talk about that.
Yes, so last year we celebrated our 40th anniversary, and for that we decided to mark it for a special occasion and travel over to the World Pipe Band Championships, which are held every year in Glasgow. So we went over there to really try and... we had a lot of members who hadn't been over before, so it was to go over there and really celebrate the existence of the band and the hard work that went in to make it the organization last that long.
How was it being from Midlothian? How was it like being in Scotland and competing against pipe bands that were, you know, indigenous?
Oh, it was exciting, and we really held our own too, which is great to see. You know, we do our best to really hold ourselves to a high standard here in competing at the Highland Games this Saturday, and the competition we'll see on Saturday is the same level that you'll get to see in Scotland.
So you're talking hundreds of bagpipers.
Yeah, right. And at the end of the day, they all come together, and there's this singular moment where you'll have one lone bagpiper like Brian that would be off in the distance that begins to play the strain of Amazing Grace. Just one lone bagpiper, and then all of a sudden you have this incredible kind of skirl of drums and pipes, and hundreds or perhaps a thousand bagpipers and drummers all join in, and we all remember the people in our community that couldn't be with us for whatever reason, some we've lost. And as they say in Scotland, it will bring a tear to a glass eye.
All right, Brian, we got to do another song, right? I mean, what are we going to hear here?
Well, this will be a tune that was written by the pipe major, lead of our band, to celebrate the 40th anniversary.
Okay, here we go. Here is Brian Dodge, a bagpiper with Midlothian Scottish, here on The Download. waiting for the drums to kick in, right? the lone bagpiper. That's Brian Dodge. He's a bagpiper with Midlothian Scottish. Gus Noble's the president of Chicago Scots, and they are the people behind the Scottish Festival and Highland Games, which take place on the 17th and 18th this weekend at Hamilton Lakes in Itasca. Gus, Brian, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks,
and,
Justin.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it very much. Thank
Have
you.
A great festival.
Take care.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this Sunday night, the Flight of the Conchords are coming to town. It's at Millennium Park. The Flight of the Conchords, of course, are the New Zealand comedy duo that took the world by storm. Opening for them is one of the cast members from the Flight of the Conchords show on HBO, Eugene Merman. Merman is a New York-based stand-up comedian who now stars in the hit Fox show Bob's Burgers. He plays Gene, one of my favorite characters. Merman has a few comedy albums under his belt. His latest is a 9-volume, 7-LP comedy album called I'm Sorry, You're Welcome. It came out last year on Sub Pop Records. It not only features his stand-up, but it also features other tracks like A Chinese Woman Eating Lasagna. Or how about a helicopter complaining about his sore blades?
My blades hurt.
And my favorite, a telephone calling a toaster.
I just don't think it's working.
Eugene Merman is a great comedian, and he's my guest tonight on The Download. Eugene Merman, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Great to be here.
All right, so let's talk about the show. I mean, this is great that you're playing. I mean, you are playing outside at Millennium Park. This is at Pritzker Pavilion. I mean, you were here in Chicago not too long ago at Pitchfork, where you played outside as well. Do you like playing outdoors as a comedian?
You know, with a comedy show, yeah, if the whole show's outside, it can be very fun. I've done a bunch of shows in Brooklyn, like by the waterfront that we've done. And I did the Hollywood Bowl with Conchords, and that was really fun. So yeah.
Do you have to change your set or change your approach to an audience when you're playing outdoor?
Yeah, when I play outside, I only do U2 songs. So get ready for
sure.
For With or Without You,
All of it.
Zooropa. Yeah,
you go right for the hits.
When I play outdoors, I do Zooropa.
You've had a great relationship with Flight of the Conchords, obviously being a part of their HBO show, but you also come from a New York crew of comics, Kristen Shaw, yourself, and others who seem to be coming up together and sticking together. Talk about the relationship you have with Flight of the Conchords and the other comedians that were part of that HBO show.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's actually pretty common in the comedy world, where people, you do shows with people all the time, and you know them, and you work with them. You know, Lauren Bouchard, who I knew from Boston, is the person who created Bob's Burgers. And, you know, some of the half the cast is sort of from Boston, John Benjamin, Larry Murphy. So a lot of it is you end up working with friends and you kind of, yeah, you often stick together and do a lot of projects together.
Well, you guys have created, I mean, you in particular with the festival and all the stuff that you've done in Brooklyn, you've created a really great Brooklyn comedy scene, a scene that rivals anywhere else in this country. Talk about that scene, because, you know, I talk about you and I talk about Kristen Shaw and others, but there are such great comedians that are stand-up comedians that are coming out of Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, there's a ton. There's a really great show at this place called Littlefield in Brooklyn that Wyatt Cenac hosts every week. That's sort of one of my favorite shows that's around now. But yeah, there's a ton of, you know, a lot of the comedy that was in New York sort of moved out of probably the East Village and into a lot of Brooklyn and parts of Queens. There's still obviously tons of comedy in Manhattan, but so much of where people live and perform now is Brooklyn.
How often do you get to do the mics in Brooklyn or to sit in with different comedians at clubs in Brooklyn?
You know, it depends. Often when I'm doing, you know, a tour or something or a special, I'll go and do lots of shows just to practice and, you know, write stuff and try stuff out. So you know, it just depends every week, I guess.
Okay, so let's talk about Bob's Burgers, which is a big hit in my household. My 8-year-old son loves it. He can't get enough
Great.
Of it.
Tell him Gene says hi.
He is a big fan of Gene. He feels like Gene is the closest to him. He said that before, that he's the Gene. Talk about that role, playing Gene on Bob's Burgers, and how it came about.
Well, Lauren Bouchard, who made the show, cast everybody in their roles. None of the main cast members auditioned for it. They were just sort of cast, and then together we all developed the characters. So a lot of each character kind of has our personalities or our comedy personalities.
Are you playing a character in Gene, or is Gene someone that comes from Eugene Merman's past?
I feel like Gene is slightly more well-adjusted than I was in a funny way. You know, because he kind of just is happy-go-lucky and a goofball and kind of embraces it. But yeah, I think Gene is the past I would have if I was now, like, as me now.
The great thing about the program is it does really kind of play to all ages. I mean, it's obviously a show for primetime adult audiences, but as a cartoon, it's going to attract a younger audience. And where there have been troubles with parents who have been having to deal with maybe, you know, their kid being exposed to the Family Guy, which is hilarious, but maybe not appropriate, Bob's Burgers seems to be a better alternative. Do you feel the same way when it comes to this being both edgy and sort of family entertainment at the same time?
Yeah, you know, I think that's actually kind of a great thing that I talk to so many people who can watch the show together as a family and all kind of enjoy it. And I think that, you know, a lot of it has to do with it sort of being, you know, all the characters were all sort of oddballs, but there's a real earnest sort of affection. And I think that really comes through in the show. So it becomes this sort of, you know, off-kilter show, but with a real warmth to it.
This is obviously a animated program for you, you know, making a foray into television, which you've done before, but the idea of doing an animated show, what are the challenges that go along with just being a voice?
The challenges are that you record one day a week instead of five. actually the thing about it that's great is we record all together and then we can try stuff. And the best part is, because it's animated, if something doesn't work, it's just not used. They later take, you know, the best stuff and cut it together. So the thing that's really wonderful isn't really, it's actually that you kind of, you can't mess up in a certain way, because you can do everything and then they can take the best of it.
Talk about the collaboration that goes into a show like Bob's Burgers. I mean, there's obviously a writer's room, but with comedians like yourself and Kristen and John, I mean, there just seems to be, you know, some really great talent that's assembled. What's the collaboration process like when it comes to not only acting it, but writing the show?
We do get to improvise a lot. So the way it basically works is we'll do each scene sort of often twice as written. And then we'll do either throw in different things or try different jokes. And the writers are suggesting jokes. We're trying different stuff. So there's a lot of, and then a lot of it ends up making it on. You know, there's a scene where we were all, where Louise is turning Gene into a little Bob, like in cutting his hair in the bathroom. And then the whole family joins in. And that was all, you know, that was a short scene that was improvised and then turned into this whole thing. And that's the kind of stuff that's really fun.
Talk about the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival. And, you know, that started in Brooklyn and now a little bit in Boston. Yeah. Talk about that, because it seems to be an outreach of your comedy.
It's funny because it began just basically as a joke, where I made a joke to my friend Julie, who we produce a lot of stuff together, and Mike Birbiglia after a show now almost 10 years ago in New York, that I was going to do a festival and call it the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival. And then I was like, well, I'm obviously not going to do that. Who would ever do that? And they were like, that's pretty funny. You should do it. And so we ended up doing it, and then we kind of really enjoyed it, and now we do it every year.
Word travels even to the Midwest about how great the festival is. I mean, it started as a joke, but when did you get serious about it?
I mean, you know, serious is a strong term. But the second year, you know, once we did it again, it was like, okay, we're going to, you know, we had an idea of what worked better, you know, what kind of stuff we could do, you know, and who was around. I mean, a lot of it is basically like which of our friends are sort of around or want to come to New York to do it.
Mm-hmm. Is that going to be something that you continue with the festival? I mean, is that something that you're going to take on
the road?
Or is it
for
just
a few years? Who knows? Yeah. I mean, Julie, who I produce it with, moved to Boston. So, and we've been doing it, you know, still, but I'm not, you know, we'll probably do it for a few more years. Who knows?
With Bob's Burgers and all the things that are coming up, are you working on new projects? Or are you continuing to work in television?
I mean, I'm continuing to do Bob's. I did a pilot, I guess, last summer now. That was a travel show that didn't end up becoming something, but I'm you know, working on new stuff to probably start pitching at some point in the fall.
Well, the show is on Sunday night. It's Flight of the Conchords, scenes Flight of the Conchords with Eugene Merman, featuring Eugene Merman, who's my guest tonight. The album is I'm Sorry, You're Welcome, the 9-volume, 7-LP comedy album, which is out on Sub Pop, and you can see Eugene Merman on the show Bob's Burgers playing Gene. Eugene, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know what? Is there a funnier show on television right now than Veep? The HBO comedy stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Selina Meyer, a woman who started off as vice president, who's now the president, and she's trying to hold on to that presidency. It's a great show that features several top-notch comedians with Chicago credits, including Louis-Dreyfus, Gary Cole, Matt Walsh, and my next guest, Timothy Simons. Simons plays Jonah Ryan, the stumbling White House aide who was put up to run for Congress in New Hampshire, and as of this week, he's the new congressman from New Hampshire. Timothy Simons spent a few years here in Chicago working in theater, and he's my guest tonight on The Download. Mr. Simons, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about your time in Chicago. So you did theater here in Chicago in the last decade, right?
I did. I moved out in 2002 and was there until 2008. My wife and I got married in 2008 and moved out to L.A. right after. But yeah, I had always been interested in small theater. I was really attracted to the storefront scene in Chicago, especially because it all came from like Sam French plays. They always have the original cast, like the original production of a play before it went to Broadway. And all of those casts were all, it seemed like all of them were workshopped and presented in Chicago. And it just seemed like all the plays that I loved that I studied when I was in school came out of Chicago. So I was kind of attracted to the scene there.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the people that are on the show that are succeeding have a background in Chicago comedy. Your background is more in Chicago theater. Did you interact with a Matt Walsh or a Dave Pasquese or Dan Back at all when you were here in Chicago? Or really, did you just meet on set?
No, I actually, almost everybody that I'm met in Chicago comedy, I met in L.A. Gary Cole and Matt and Kevin Dunn is a Chicagoan. He was born in Chicago. Sam Richardson is a big Second City guy. Brad Morris, who's been on the show. Pete Groats. Like, all of those guys I didn't meet until I was in L.A. I just, yeah, I never really had occasion to meet them because I was trying to do plays and they were all either had left town by the time I was there or they were all doing Second City stuff.
We've had a lot of those people on and we've talked about how loose the set is when it comes to improvisation and how their skills from the Chicago improv scene have come to help them in a show like Veep. How does it help you? Obviously, you didn't go through the improv training here, but how does it help you that you were a part of the Chicago theater scene?
Well, I mean, I actually ended up, Matt Walsh had something to do with it. I started at UCB in L.A. when I moved out there, so I had a little bit of training through sort of like Matt Walsh's school. The biggest thing that I feel like equates is that the focus was on the work and the ensemble. Like Chicago has, and Chicago theater has an unbelievable work ethic, and it's about making the shows better. And it also doesn't seem to be a city that rewards a big ego. And so on, working with an ensemble is sort of the main goal, and on a show like ours, ensemble and trust and that sort of thing, that's huge.
Well, you can feel it too, like when you're seeing the show. I mean, there's so many moving parts, and there's such a quick wit for a cast with such great talent. For you being in the middle of that, playing Jonah, do you feel it in the moment? I mean, it just seems like it's such an ensemble-driven show.
It is. We have, I don't know how much the other people have talked about this, but it's a fluid process is the way that we describe it. Everything changes a lot. There would be some days where you'll be going, walking up to set to film a 12-page scene, and you'll get handed new pages with them, and with a lot of changes. And one of the best parts about it is that you'll rehearse it a couple times, but you know that if you mess something up, if you drop the ball, somebody's going to back you up. Somebody's going to pick you up. They're not just going to let you flounder. And that's when you feel it, is like sort of in those moments where you're not completely sure-footed in every scene. Everybody really works hard to, you know, rising tide raises all boats, as they say.
You know, you play one of the best characters in television. Jonah Ryan is one of my favorites in the way that he is a very confident, maybe too cocky. but he's had such an evolution on the program over the seasons, you know, from being the sort of White House liaison to being, you know, the everyone's punching bag to now the congressman from New Hampshire. Talk about what makes Jonah Ryan work.
So what makes him work? I don't know. I'm glad that people have a positive response to him for being such a terrible person. I think that his being a congressman just kind of fits in with his vision of himself. Like, he is that just sort of so self-assured. He knows that he has such a high opinion of himself that I just feel like he always saw himself as a congressman. He always saw himself as a leader, and anybody that never believed in him or called him names, they were just haters. Like, they were just in his way, or they were jealous of his skill and his personality and his good looks and his charm. Like, that's the way I believe he looks at these things. And so I think there's the reason that he succeeds when so many other people would fail, is that he has a completely misplaced blind faith in his own ability.
Well, that's what we love about, I think, what everybody loves. Even though Jonah Ryan, the character, is a terrible person, you get the feeling that, you know, he's found a way, and the writers and Veep have found a way for him to win in some situations. I mean, obviously, he's been, you know, put down and put down and put down. And now, in this case, he's the congressman of New Hampshire. And there's no better scene than the last scene of this past week, where his acceptance speech is essentially calling out the people he went to high school with and telling them off. That's great.
You know, I don't know if this is going to get me crucified in Chicago, but I think the seed of that, that speech was different on the morning that we filmed it, and it wasn't quite working. I can't remember what it was about it, but it wasn't quite working. And when we started, like, throwing around ideas about what it could be, I think I brought up Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech that was him just putting, like, the guy that got put on the team, like, the spot on the varsity team that Michael Jordan wanted. He called that guy in, right, and put him in the front row and pointed him out and was like, look at where you are now and look at where I am. And it was like this unbelievably petty thing. And I think that's where we started. Like, that was the seed of where that scene came from. Like, somebody that should get up there and at least fake being humble for a second, but just is unable to do it.
I'm assuming, and I don't know you, but I'm assuming that Jonah Ryan is a full-fledged character and you don't have the same traits, but where do you draw Jonah Ryan from?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, like, most of it, and I think this is maybe part of, like, the Chicago theater training thing, was just, like, most of it you're drawing from, you know, like, even if you don't act on it, we all are, you know, we all have ego in some way. And even if we don't act on it, like Jonah Ryan does, it's all in there. So I've tried to draw on, like, my own, like, the worst part of myself, or the worst parts of myself that hopefully never come out in real life. I've tried to draw from those. And mostly it's just trying to spin, however somebody that doesn't like Jonah, however they would describe him, I've just tried to spin those positive so that he can get out of bed in the morning and look at himself and still tell himself that he's doing a good job.
You know, for you guys, I mean, obviously you're right in the heart of an actual political season campaign here, 2016. And we've heard over and over, you know, headlines about you can't even make this stuff up. Veep can't keep up with what's actually happening in the campaign. For you, are you a political person? Were you always sort of a person who was into the political climate, or are you just acting the part?
No, I was actually always interested in it. And being on this show and being around politics more and finding out more about it and sort of seeing behind the scenes on some of it and seeing behind the curtain, I have become much more cynical about politics to the point where I do not follow it as closely. Before, I was very much one of those people on Facebook that could find any article on the internet that proved that my opinion was true and real and fact rather than just opinion. And now I'm much more cynical about the whole process.
All right. Well, the takeaway from Veep and having the opportunity as an actor and a character to improvise, to add to the script, talk about how a show like Veep helps you as an actor for future gigs.
Well, one of the things is how to work in an ensemble. That's a huge one. And also just, like, not learning how to roll with changes and changes that happen the moment before you're about to do something. I mean, that's one of the, like, that's sort of the constant in film, is that everything's going to change. You know, if you're filming outside, you're dealing with elements. If you're, you, they could write a location and a location could fall through, and you just have to, you just can't be stuck in whatever initial thought you had, you thought the scene would be. You have to be, or maybe something is going to be discovered in the scene as you're doing it, and you've got to be willing to adapt to it.
Timothy Simons is the man who plays Jonah Ryan on the hit HBO show Veep. There's still a few more episodes here this season. Timothy, thanks so much for taking some time out and talking to us tonight on The Download.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me back on. I really miss Chicago. This feels like being back home for a second.
All right, it's a download here on WGN Radio. I am Justin Kaufman, and I'm here till 11 o'clock. Patty Vasquez takes over at 11 o'clock, the Silver Dome Personality of the Year. How about that? It's exciting. Congratulations to Patty. She won a big award today. It's awesome. Coming up here, all right, we are ready for a big... This is one of my favorite hours of the month. It's Write Club Radio. Two writers enter, one writer leaves. This is our regular segment where two writers take on two different sides of an issue. The winner is decided by you at home. It's based on the show Write Club, which is a monthly lit battle at the Hideout. Their last stage show of the season is coming up this Tuesday night, June 21st. Lindsay Muscato is one of the people behind Write Club, and she is here. Lindsay, good to see you.
Hello, good to see you too.
Yeah, I know. I wish this was every week. I've been trying to push you guys to do it every week, and you're we're too busy. Yeah, right. We'll do it every day. Tonight, the writers are going to take on persist versus quit. Why pick this persist versus quit?
Well, okay, so it's the end of our season at Write Club, and things are kind of, you know, summer's ahead, and sort of like, all right, what do you want to do with your life, you know? Like, what are the kinds of things that you want to focus on? Some things you got to keep at it if it's challenging. Some things you just got to leave behind, and summer's a good time to do that, like pick up a new hobby or, like, you know, let go of some old baggage. It's a good sort of renewal time.
This is very existential.
It's a little existential.
Yep, here we go. Jen Ellison is here performing at the Chicago Women's Funny Festival this weekend. She also is a director in town, comedian. She's directing a show at the Up Comedy Club at Second City in Old Town coming up. Jen, good to see you.
It's good to see you.
All right. Also, Jeff Miller. Jeff, nice to meet you. He's the author of the middle grade fiction series called The Nerdy Dozen. Both of you are performing. Who's got persist and who's got quit?
I have persist.
Classic.
I also have persist.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
My greatest fear has come true.
Oh, my gosh. That, like, made my heart jump a little bit.
No, I have quit.
Okay.
Have quit.
Okay, good. Oh, my God.
All right, Lindsay, take us through the rules here, because what we'll do is we'll set up the rules for everyone at home, and then essentially, you know, we're going to do this. They're going to read two pieces, and then we're going to be the judge. Who do we like? Do we like persist or quit? And the one who gives the most thoughtful answer is going to get pizza.
What?
Yeah, not you guys, but the listeners at home, 312-981-7200. I'm giving away a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. I've got a pizza, and but it's got to be more than persist.
Yeah,
quit.
You have to think about it.
Quit. That's what you'll get. And I like that. That's good for tallying, but we want to get a little bit more thought out of it.
Yeah, so Write Club is two opposing writers, two opposing ideas. The order is chosen by rock, paper, scissors, because the second person kind of has a slight advantage. The only fair way, science has proven, is rock, paper, scissors. And then we often have we always have the audience vote at the Hideout, right? So it's applause
it's like
at our live
at the
show.
Apollo, right?
Yeah.
Who's got the most, yeah.
But here, as you just said, we vote by people who want pizza. So you would call or text in and say who you thought won. And each writer gets 4 minutes to do their piece. So they were assigned this topic in advance. They have written it. They have prepared it. And they're going to do it
in four minutes.
Yep.
I love it. And I know that at one point or another, you'll be at the Hideout with Write Club. And someone will be like, where's my pizza?
Yeah.
I cheered very loud.
It's not
the same.
They'll
be like, no, it's different. We've got different rules, different places, different prizes. All right. 312-981-7200. Pete, why don't we take a break? And then we'll come back and do rock, paper, scissors, and we'll hear from both of our writers. It's Download. It's Write Club Radio. Stay with us. 10 o'clock. It's 10:18 here on the download on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Right Club Radio, two writers enter. One writer does a little bit better than the other, according to our WGN audience. 312-981-7200. Lindsay Moscato is here from Right Club. Their show is at the Hideout, the final show of the season, which will be coming up here on Tuesday the 21st. Jen Ellison and Jeff Miller in studio. They're our writers tonight. Should we do the rock, paper, scissors?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's
we
do it.
We should. So this is important because this determines the order of combatants. And in order to do this on the radio, you have to yell your things at the same time. You can do it, Jen.
I'm going to freak out.
You can do it. I believe in you.
I'll be like, rock, paper, scissors.
No, just pick one.
Okay, I'll pick one of them.
Okay.
I'll pick one.
All right, and we do it on three, so it's 1, 2, 3, blam. So if you're listening at home, you can count along. All right, everybody ready?
Yes.
Set.
One, two, three, paper.
Oh. I got to do it again.
Okay, we got to do it again.
Both writers go for paper.
Ready?
One, two, three, rock.
Scissors.
Hey. Ooh. Jen wins. No, rock wins.
Smash.
Rock wins.
I don't even know
rock
how the game's
wins.
Played.
Justin.
I'm sorry.
Smash.
I'm a terrible rock, paper, scissors
smash
guy.
It.
All right, so you smash, so that means that you get to choose first or second.
I'll go second.
Oh, we'll go look second. At Jeff. Look yeah. at Jeff.
Fair
oh.
choice.
All
fair
right,
choice.
Jen Ellison's on the hook to go first here. All right, and remember, you are persist.
I am persist.
And the items tonight are persist versus quit. These writers have put things together, and these ideas persist versus quit. Are we ready for Right Club Radio, Lindsay?
We are so ready.
You
want to
give
these.
Us a ding?
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Jen Ellison in 3, 2, 1, begin.
Behind the guidance counselor's desk hangs a large format poster. You've seen it before. You involuntarily know it by heart. An orange feline is adorably clutching a branch, staring confused at an unseen photographer as they snap prints that will prove to make a mint and appear as a cliche made flesh in your guidance counselor's office. The caption reads below in puffy Baroque font, "Hang in there, baby." You'll journal about it later while you listen to The Cure. Your office manager, Vicky, is addicted to successories. The posters, calendars, coasters with dazzling stock photos of silhouetted men and women running through the desert or jogging bottom to the top of the stadium steps, dewy and strong. They're all emblazoned with quotes, famous and not, extolling the virtues of persistence. Slow and steady wins the race. Perseverance is failing 19 times and succeeding the 20th. Persistence conquers all. Continuous effort, not strength or intelligence, is the key to unlocking our potential, Calvin Coolidge says. Energy and persistence conquer all things. Vicky perpetually hums just what makes that little old ant think he can move the rubber tree plant. Everyone knows that an ant can't. Vicky also wears a lot of acid wash denim. You live blog about it later while you listen to Counting Crows. You scroll your Facebook feed, waiting through the clickbait quizzes, inexplicably trending news, and misattributed quotes to see that Daryl has posted yet another word porn image from Pinterest. You only fail if you stop trying, it says. Your finger hovers over the trackpad, considering which emoticon best expresses your ambivalence. You post about it on Tumblr while you listen to Radiohead. Persistence and its expression is excessively irritating. It has been co-opted and commodified by corporations to motivate and boost productivity of their account managers, sales forces, and customer service reps. It's hard not to sneer at the bumper stickerification of one of our most human qualities, the incessant cheerleading, the you can do it, the piercing cries on the sidelines as you serve to push us on, the need, the instinct to persist. We claim we're too smart for that. We don't buy into that kind of aw shucks optimism. You're not a joiner. No thanks, sheeple. And yet, you cannot resist the need to persist. It is imperative. Those truisms and aphorisms nagging and knocking at your noggin remind you every day in and out that you must not cease. Sure, those cheerleaders with their rah-rahs and their sis-boom-bahs prey on your nerves, but still serve as a reminder that if you stop, you will die. You persist to continue firmly or obstinately to an opinion or a course of action in spite of difficulty, opposition, or failure. Did you battle to wake and shake off the sleep despite the undertow of your dreams? You persist. persist. Did you eat a bowl of disappointing Cheerios? You persist. Did you go to your job in the hopes that with your hopes possibly dampened? You persist. Did you breathe? Think? You persist. Through the night, did you study or write? You persist. It's in your blood and your veins and your DNA. It's in your humanity. We persist. It is impossible not to. The fact that you're even sitting there able to judge the cliches and the sayings and the likes and the dislikes is a testament to your ancestors' persistence. Despite plagues and war and violent opposition, still we persist. Despite the universe's chilly indifference, we persist. Human beings are excellent innovators at stupidity, and we stumble over our own mistakes. And in and out of this, we are the Michael Jordans of foolishness. Still we persist and are here. Persistence just is. Take comfort in the fact of it and relish the act of it. You can smirk at the corny sayings and the t-shirts and quotes, but they are still true and true and true. And why they persist despite pessimism and broken hearts? This is why they persist despite pessimism and broken hearts. Bring on the Coolidges and the Truths and the Babe Ruths and the Oprahs. Through persistence, we muster the strength for 14-hour filibusters. In your heart, you are the guidance counselor. You are the Vicky. You are the word porn. Slow and steady wins the race. You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. You just can't beat a guy who won't quit. He's got high hopes. High hopes. High apple pie in the sky hopes. Whoops, there goes another rubber tree plant. Hang in there, baby.
Yes.
Jen Ellison, representing Persist. All right.
Take close that, on world.
Lindsay, close on the old counter. I'm watching here.
Yeah. Yeah. Close on the old counter. But you know,
she made it.
We are really proud of these guys, you know?
They prepared. Just saying. I thought something there would be electric shock if she goes over 4 minutes.
There's not an electric shock, but there's a buzz.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Jeff Miller. This is a delightful look. All right, Jeff, are you ready?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We want to count it down, Lindsay?
All right. So, are you ready?
Yes.
I'll just ding again because that was fun on the radio.
I love it.
Ding, 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 ding. Jeff Miller in 3, 2, 1, begin.
When an artist starts off on their little bohemian adventures, or whatever it is we're all doing here, lots of people love to give advice, like get health insurance or don't sell out, some say. Change my name in your songs. Also, I'm not so sure about the band name Fallout Boy, a few will scold. Most people, though, seem fond of telling folks to not quit their day job. It's a cliche. An accurate cliche, yes, but a cliche nonetheless. However, imagine for the next 4 minutes that it's wrong. Let us suppose that quitting is the only thing to be done, really. I did so for a career in writing. What is a career in writing, some of you might be asking? Imagine going into the woods and setting all of your possessions on fire. I'm not so sure how or why, but I think that does a good job of summing it all up. But I can say with total confidence I'm happy with my decision. And so, I give you my top 5 reasons for quitting your day job to write. The number 1 reason, waking up on Monday morning with nowhere to be. Can you think about the last time that happened to you? Wasn't it exhilarating? Years ago, I used to work in a big cement block. I sold online coupons to senior citizens that were literally afraid of the internet. Every day, I talked with people that were very serious about cutting a deal on their haircut or genital waxing. After several years of doing this, I quit my job. My day job. And the thing I'd like everyone on AM radio to realize is that inside of this cement block were thousands of capable and driven humans. They could have changed the world in certain ways if they wanted to. They had zest. They had snappy outfits. They had a huge pair of golden handcuffs on both wrists. And I'm talking massive. If they all could have quit their jobs for 1 year and banded together, who knows what kind of seriously amazing stuff they could have created. Instead, they all waited in line for non-fat lattes. Number 2, naps. My God, the naps you'll take. Anywhere, at any time. You quit your job, name a chain restaurant, and you can nap there, okay? Number 3, going to a grocery store not on a weekend. Have you ever been to a Trader Joe's on a Sabbath? It's an actual Thunderdome. But don't fret, you'll never actually be lonely, per se. It would amaze you at all how many people seemingly don't have day jobs. You can walk into a bar or restaurant during the middle of the day and be one of a handful of lost souls aimlessly looking at their Facebooks or Instagrams. It's great. Number 4, The number four reason for quitting your job is visiting the dentist. And this is for my folks out there behind the glass. Legend has it every seventh uninsured dental visit ends with an actual tooth fairy granting you three wishes. Three wishes that can involve paying your student loans, but some still pretty okay wishes nonetheless. And lastly, the fifth reason for quitting your job is that I fully believe life is tragically too short to be stuck doing something you hate. Work sucks, dudes. Always has, always will. If quitting something makes you feel alive and simultaneously freaks out your loved ones, I say go for it. So, dear listeners, let a picture take shape in your brain. Visualize your job. And quit it. Quit it right now. Go to bed dreaming about quitting your job tonight. Will you flip your desk over? Will you throw packets of ketchup at the gentleman who has stolen your lunch on three separate occasions? Will you send an email entirely in capital letters? Whatever you do, quit. Quit now. Quit tomorrow. Quit forever. Quit.
Hey, there's quit. Jeff Miller.
All right.
Jeff gave us quit. Jen gave us persist. Thank you very much. Both great performances. 312-981-7200. All right, what do we think? Do we like persist or do we like quit? It's Right Club Radio here on WGN. 312-981-7200. That was good.
Oh, that was amazing. And they both were right under the wire and awesome. Like, I love both of those. So, haha, I don't have to pick because I'm not calling in for a pizza.
The best sort of description of why you like persist or why you like quit gets the pizza. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break for the news. We'll come back and we'll read these texts and take your calls. It's Right Club Radio. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Right Club Radio is in the house. Persist versus quit. Jen Ellison, who's performing at the Chicago Women's Funny Festival. She's also directing a show at Up Comedy Club at Seconds in the Old Town. And Jeff Miller, who is the author of the middle grade fiction series called The Nerdy Dozen. There are writers tonight. Jen did persist. Jeff did quit. Lindsay is the person behind Right Club, which will be on stage Tuesday, the final show of the season at the Hideout.
Yep.
All right. Are we ready for this?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Carol, what do we like? Do you like persist or quit?
Quit.
Okay, why?
Well, because that's what I did. And life really is too short. So when I was 41, I quit my last real-time job as a civil service employee at UIC. Tons of perks, 5 paid weeks vacation. Went back to graduate school in English, then began life as a freelance writer and writing coach, and I've never looked back.
Wow. That's fantastic. There you go. That's great.
That's awesome.
Thank you very much. I'm going to put you on hold for that. That's great. All right. What do we like? Pam, quit or persist?
I like quit.
Why do you like quit?
Quit because whenever I have felt very uncomfortable with a position I've had, I have quit and I'm always going on to find something that I'm better suited for. So it's always been a winner for me to quit.
Hmm. All right. Thanks, Pam. Thank you for that. All right. So 2-4 quits. All right, it's getting a little hot in here.
It's starting to look like a little bit of a landslide.
No, let's hold on. 815.
Listen, I paid Pam and Carol.
815 says, wonderful, persist. Loved her energy. I'm moving on Saturday. I'm exhausted. I can't think of packing another thing. Yes, I can. There goes another rubber tree plant. Persist.
Yeah. You're changing lives.
Changing lives. One rubber tree plant.
There
at
you
time.
Go.
That's amazing.
630 says, never give up the ship. Persist. There you go. All right, let's go to Margaret. Margaret, what do we like, Margaret?
Oh, we like quit. We got to go with quit.
Why quit?
Why? Because August 19th, I leave my job. I'm going to Southern Illinois University, and I'm enrolled for the final year of radiology, going into CTMRI.
All right. Great. Congratulations. Very That's cool. awesome.
That's
Thank
awesome.
You. Thank you, Margaret. I'm going to put you on hold for that. That's okay. So, all right. So, like I said, we got a three. I'm seeing 3 quits, 2 persists mm-hmm. as we go here.
All right. Pins and needles. Text in.
All right. 779 says, I'm with her. So,
Hillary?
It might be Hillary, oh. Or it could be you, Jen. I'm not sure.
Well, all women are alike, so I'm Hillary.
Let me ask as there's more here, but let me ask as Pete does the little bit of screening. What went through your head when you were doing Persist? Like, what was the obviously the piece, but what inspired it?
I think that a lot of those things were very real to me. Sort of the looking at those successory posters or anything where people are like, you know, they have a T-shirt that it's, you know, like, never give up. And I'm like, I love those things. I actually secretly in my heart, like, I kind of I'm like, oh yes, I'm very into those. But my exterior is a little bit sort of like, I don't need that, you know. So it was very real, but at the end of the day, I'm incredibly optimistic, and I believe in persisting. So it was like you know, I was reading my diary.
Good to know. All right, Jeff, what went into quit?
I feel like it was a little bit of the same. I feel like I'm a persistent and optimistic person as well, but I've quit a few things in my life. One of them was my job to pursue writing, and one of them was a trail crew in Arizona that I did for a while. And so I thought about writing about that, but...
What is a trail crew like? You? So
we would wake up at 4 a.m. and hike 2 miles in before the sun rose to go cut basically like prickly pear and lots of other things for 8-9 hours a day outside of Tucson. And then we would come back to our campsite that we had set up, and I did that for a few months. And that was
point of it, though. I mean, tell them the point. Like, what do you mean, cut prickly pear?
Like the actual
prickly pear, and then like eat it sell it.
So it was called Seven Falls. If anyone's near a computer, Google Seven Falls, Tucson, Arizona. It's a beautiful trail. It's amazing. But we would I was part of the leadership side of that, and so you'd get to work with folks that really enjoyed and kind of like could use. A program is loosely based off of the original Conservation Corps.
Okay,
and so there was actually a trail that we worked on that was originally made by the Triple C a while ago. But so I thought about writing about quitting that or quitting my job, and so I chose my job.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have some options.
Yeah,
quitting options.
And I still have scars on my arms.
Oh, man.
From the prickly pears?
From the coupon factory, actually. No.
Ow, paper cut.
You can quit more things later. It's never too late to quit something else.
Exactly.
312-981-7200. What do we like? Do we like persist or do we like quit? Let's go with Kathy. Kathy, do you like persist or quit?
I like persist.
All right. Why persist?
Why? Because I found out that I had a liver disease, and I had to be on a transplant list, and I wouldn't let it get me down. The depression did hit for a while, but I persisted to do everything I could for my health and to live the rest of my health and life happy.
All right, Kathy, that's great. That's great. Thanks for the call. I'm going to put you on hold. I like that. Kathy's probably going to win the pizza because that's like serious.
It's a good story.
It's a good story. And I, you know, like I think that what I really like about it is I feel like a lot of people are really taking this to heart in the way that they're talking about things that they are going to quit their job. They are going to persist because they have a disease. There's things that, you know, that it's less about whether or not you guys did a good job.
They're not even talking about what we said.
No, I feel like they just heard the words and were like, yes.
Well, but I mean, there's
what
a little
feeling did we give them?
There's feeling, though. Yeah, that's good. That's a good thing.
I think there was something to you saying this was sort of a soul-searching set of topics, and I do think that people really respond. Like, it's kind of an interesting Rorschach test.
Truthfully. Okay, we've got here. There's a couple that are just words. One that says quit. Okay, one that says quit. So we got quit is up 5-4 in my count, and then 312 says the Cavs are the best ever. So yes. I'm not sure what that is.
Set a vote for.
Does it quit or persist?
What did they do in the game? Did they?
The Cavs persist? Did win. They did persist.
Okay.
Yeah, so there you go. All right. Here's what we're going to do. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. And we will crown a winner. 312-981-7200. We're really close. I mean, it's really close. So your vote could be the deciding factor. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. All right, it's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Patty Vasquez coming up next here. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. All right, 847 says, purses, I think they...
Persist?
I think they, yeah.
Purses versus pocketbooks.
Purses versus...
Yeah. I like this.
Purses versus satchels.
I vote satchels.
I like this a lot. This is pretty good. Purses because the passion in the presentation was pointed and just disjointed enough to make me want to push on. So they're playing a little game. They're writing.
Well.
That should make you feel good, Jen.
It does.
We're going to give that to persist.
No. Right? not coach purses.
That's the third category is purses.
Purses.
8219 says, persist. Very good argument, and thank you for my new favorite word, sheeple.
Oh,
look
lives.
At this.
I told you.
All right, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll give a going once in about 2 minutes here. Right now, I have persist in the lead by one vote. So if you...
get on it, people. We got to make this right down to the wire.
Okay. Did you say it's shameful?
Oh, no, I said listen, sheeple.
Oh.
Listen, sheeple.
I'm using her words against her.
All right, 312-981-7200. So the show is the final show.
Of the season,
Of the season. What can we expect from the show on Tuesday?
We are going to have topics that are really... themed around quitting or not quitting, actually. So it's all going to be similar stuff, and it'll be probably a really packed show. So come a little bit early if you want to come and see it. And it's, 7 o'clock at the Hideout, $10 at the door.
All right, there you go. Why will it be packed? Because it's the last show of the season.
It's the last one of the season.
Everyone's
and people love
procrastinating.
Us.
And it's the best show in Chicago.
It's a great show.
I truly believe it.
There you go.
I really love going. I think it's really fun.
It's Yay! The most fun, yeah.
Well, hopefully the founder, Ian Belknap, will be at that show, and we will...
Hopefully he'll be there.
Hopefully he'll be there.
There's a Tyler Durden air about him these days that it's...
We'll just wind it down in delightful fashion. It'll be great.
312 says quit, which is not the vote we needed to make this thing a final, because that ties us up now. 847 said persist, not purses. Damn autocorrect.
Oh no.
I knew it was autocorrect.
You were wonderful. Thank you for both texts.
I think that's great. I was like, purse is so good. This happened in we play the worst on Tuesday nights. And there was a great one where it just, the text came in and it's for everyone listening at home, it's like an interface. So I see all the texts. It's sort of like they're in blue. And I get to see them come in the numbers associated to it. So the number, it just said Little Shops. The game is, well, you know what's the worst? And the text was Little Shops. And I'm like, that's hilarious. That's so good, right? I was like, that's a winner. Little Shops are the worst. You're right. And then I realized that if you do too many characters, it like has a little hanging chad. Like it'll bounce the next one. So there was a whole text that was like, you know what I hate is when I go into a little blah, 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 and all that's left is Little Shops. You know, like it wasn't as great as Little Shops.
Right.
And I'm like, oh. Oh, okay.
Okay.
I mean, I really like Little Shops. So you do have to watch with autocorrect and the texting. Sometimes I give way too much creativity and clever to the texters where I'm like, purses, hilarious. I get it. Purses because you're reaching in and you don't know what's in the purse and the purse is big and it makes you want to keep looking. I get it. Yeah. All right. Are you guys ready? We got 815 is going to give us the win. Okay. Are we ready? It's in. Ladies and gentlemen, the winner tonight is Persist. 815 comes in with Persist. What? The concept of persist beats the concept of quit. Again, I think it may have more to do with the ideas at play here, but I think that's good. Jen Ellison, Jeff Miller, thank you both for playing.
Well fought.
Lindsay Moscato, Right Club on Tuesday at the Hideout, as you just heard, best show in the city. It'll be at the Hideout on Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, right?
Yep, we will see you then.
All right, thanks again for everyone for playing. And we're giving the pizza to, I forgot her name, Pete. What is it? Kathy. Kathy's going to get the pizza. So, Kathy, congratulations. We're going to send you a gift certificate to Lou Malnati's. Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Always fun to have Right Club Radio in the studio. Patty Vasquez coming up next here on 720 WGN Radio. Hey, we're going to the Des Plaines, the Taste of Des Plaines tomorrow night for the next stop on the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. So come on out. Join us for a live broadcast of the download tomorrow from 7 to 11 at Taste of Des Plaines. We're going to kick off the event. You're going to find live entertainment, food, beverages, activities for the whole fam. We have so much great stuff. We're going to have a celebration, a Des Plaines celebration. How about that? I'm so excited to go out there. Pete, are you excited?
It's going to be great.
I know.
The weather is supposed to be beautiful. It's going to be music,
the
food,
only, the
beer.
Only thing that I'm worried about, and I'm not worried, but the only thing that like bums me out is that we'll be on the air. Like I want to get some tickets. I want to go on rides.
Well, we're going to go early and scoop and you know check out the festivities before.
Yeah, that's true.
Ride the Ferris wheel.
Yeah, right. I guess you're right.
Go check out the original McDonald's. It's right there in Des Plaines.
Yeah, I need after I'm going to save my game of, oh, you're from, where are you from? Chicago. Oh, we're from Des Plaines until tomorrow, you know, to have a little nugget for the town.
There you go.
Because tomorrow I'm going to learn so much about Des Plaines that, you know, I might as well wait. Because right now I'd be like, oh, yeah, you got that. You got a river. A lot of river there. It rains. That's not good. Or, oh, you're right by the airport. Right.
That's all right. That's pretty good
and
for
McDonald's,
a start.
And McDonald's. I would do the McDonald's, too.
Des Plaines conveniently nestled along Northwest Highway.
Mm-hmm.
There's an oasis, right?
The oasis.
Yeah, that's right. It's gone. Yeah. That's gone.
Oh, it's gone.
Yeah, but that's the Des Plaines Oasis, which I always thought would be a great like alt-rock band name, right? We are Des Plaines Oasis, like a rap rock. They'd have to be rap rock, though. Because, you know, every you know, suburban kid that would come into the city would see that sign. That would be a perfect thing. I can't believe no one called themselves Des Plaines Oasis. We just did. All right, so we'll be in Des Plaines tomorrow for the Taste of Des Plaines. And Rob, you got about 8 hours to figure it out.
I'm thinking about it. Mulling it over.
You should, man. It's going to be a ton of fun. And I already got some texters like, hey, where are you guys going to be? I'd love to come out. I'll say hi. So you get to meet some people. You know, you can maybe, who knows? Maybe someone will be like, hey, I just put a shed in my backyard, a new shed. And they'd be like, oh, hey, cool. So I'm doing the same thing. And they'll be like, here's what you got to remember.
Right.
And then you get a little tip out of it.
Believe me, I need help.